But Matt Bubal here with you, 720 WGN. Roger Badish in the newsroom. Jess Rains behind the glass. When you dial 312-981-7200, or you can text us at that number. Good morning, Roger Badish.
Well, good morning, Matt Bubal. How are you,
sir?
I'm doing great.
Missed you last week.
I missed you last week.
I was out in the desert of Las Vegas.
Yeah, my old stomping grounds.
Yes. I did not visit your old newsroom.
That's all right.
Is your old newsroom still there?
I'm trying to think. The one, you know what? I don't know. It's been a while since I've been to see any of them.
I stayed at Mandalay Bay.
Okay, on the Strip?
Yep, and I've been there since the shooting. That was almost a year ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been there since then. It's very interesting because you wonder, like, what have they done since then? Because that was a weird situation that this guy brought in all these guns. Generally, big hotels, people check in. They've got luggage. They've got things. What do you do?
Yeah.
So you wonder what they're doing now.
Mm-hmm. Nothing.
The only thing that I could see in the last two times I've been there is that there's a main elevator bank in the hotel. Three different sets of elevators that go to three different sets of floors.
Okay, right.
They have a security guard.
At the elevator.
At the elevator.
Okay, and that's it.
That's it. And I don't know what they're doing. They're looking things over. You still have to bring your luggage to go to your rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they're assessing the bags or thinking about them or if they're doing anything or if it's just a show.
Mm-hmm.
The only other thing that changed is you now have to use your key card on the elevator.
Right.
Before you can punch in your floor.
You have to swipe it before you can.
And you can only go to your floor
for
your key card.
Right.
Which would not have done anything, I don't think, for the guy who did the shooting.
Because he had a room.
It was in his room.
Yeah.
So there's that. So other than that, I don't know. Maybe there's other things they've done that they don't tell the public about. I passed by the venue, which is, you know, right across the street from the Mandalay Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And it still looked relatively the same. It's always, for the years I've been going out there, we go for a conference every year with our friend Steve Dale, who was just on. And and I've looked down on that area many times from the room, and it's basically just a huge lot that they used to have concerts at.
Is it like a parking lot?
Basically,
or was
like looks like a huge parking lot. It wasn't. It was never striped, as I could see it from my room,
okay.
For parking. It wasn't like it's used for parking, and then they suddenly put it. It just seems like a huge empty lot that always had. In the years I've been going, we would always see and wonder. I'd never known that there were concerts there, but I wondered what goes on there because you'd see like some bleacher stuff and some staging. It was never set up for a concert when I was there, but you could tell that the stuff was there for some sort of events.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine there's lots of events, and I imagine they haven't held anything since. My guess is they never will again, that it'll become
probably a
parking lot or get developed at some point or something. It was just when we passed it in a cab, the fence all around it had black tarping on it, so you couldn't really see into it from ground level. That may be how it always was. I don't know to remember for sure, but there's nothing to really say here.
Now, was it attached? It's attached or a part of a hotel complex, isn't it?
No, it's
just unto itself.
It's just a huge, like about a two block plot of land.
Oh.
That's just an open lot.
Hmm.
And it's all fenced off. And it was kind of a venue. A venue that was very malleable. They could do whatever they want with you because there's nothing actually built there.
Yeah, just a big open space.
All temporary structures.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was hot out there last week. It was like 9,700 degrees.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Well, when we lived out there, we lived there for 3.5 years. And there were times during the summer where, and I was too cheap to have air conditioning in the car. Now, again, we're talking late
70s. In Las Vegas, you were too cheap to have air conditioning
in
the car?
Well, we had just gotten married before we went out there. We got out there. I wasn't making a lot of money. Bridget was working. She wasn't making a lot of money. Again, mid to late 70s. And so we bought our first car. My dad had bought us a car to get out there, and the thing barely got us there. And so we had to buy a new car. And it was very cool. We got the loan from Bank of Nevada, and it was the branch that, if you see the Vegas TV show, do you remember that show?
So the original
Vegas TV show?
Which was, who was,
What's his name? Was the was private eye?
Robert Urich.
Robert Urich,
so
yes.
Was his name Dan Tanna on
yes.
the show?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I always forget if Dan Tanna was its own thing or if that was
a... Well, there was a show, I believe, Dan Tanna with Burt Reynolds.
Really?
Which was a Q Martin, Quinn Martin production.
Well, that was a spinoff or preceded?
No, it was completely separate and different.
And this character, and the, but it was the same character, just played by different actors?
No, completely did. They just stole the name.
So there were two different characters named Dan Tanna?
Dan Tanna.
All right, let's throw a dollar on that. I
okay.
want you to prove me.
Well, I don't know. The name just strikes me as,
it's
I remember
very,
it as both.
It's a sticky name, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, but the Quinn Martin production was long before Vegas. The Robert Urich show. Mm. Okay. So where he had his little house, was behind the Bank of Nevada branch where we went and got our loan for the car. And that building actually existed. You know, I mean, I know they did a lot of Hollywood soundstage stuff.
Sure.
But that building that he would drive to on the cover shots, that building was actually there. So we knew all that. But we got a car. And couldn't afford the air conditioning, so obviously roll the windows down and drive.
That's how we grew up, right?
And we learned not to put your arm on the edge of the door.
You would burn that arm?
You bet your sweet pippy you would. There would be 110 degree days out there for like 3 or 4 days straight. And you just didn't touch anything metal.
And for those of you that gamble, if you're gambling your sweet pippy, you have become a degenerate. You really have to stop. Because once you get to the sweet pippy, there's not a lot left. You've got to be careful with that.
Did Jess look up the Dan Tanna? No, she didn't look it up.
I think Jess is ordering pizza. She is busy.
We've got priorities Jess on the show.
During pizza ordering people.
Yeah.
Got to get our...
We got... Yeah. So, his name was Dan Tanna on the Vegas show. Thank you, Jess. She just gave me an update on how long. And Dan.
Now you got to remind me, Roger, because here's what I remember. Because this was really, I was little when those shows were on. Okay, and I always remember there was one show that I want to say it was Dan Tanna had this apartment. But maybe it was one of those other shows at the time where there was this weird chair that like hung from the ceiling.
That was the one.
It was Dan Tanna's apartment.
That was the Vegas. It wasn't an apartment. It was that building he would drive in. That's where he slept. That's where his office was. That's where his secretary usually walked around in a bikini.
His secretary walked around in a bikini?
Yeah, most of the shows.
Vegas, baby.
It's Vegas. All right, so now I'm going to look up the... Burt Reynolds TV show. I could have sworn it was Dan August. My bad. Two Dans.
Roger owes me a dollar for those.
I owe you a dollar for that. You can have an extra slice
of
pizza.
I'll tell you what. I'm buying the pizza, so you can put that extra dollar also.
I have been putting it away.
How much is the Disney fund up to now?
The Disney fund is over $300.
Whoa, that's
doing
pretty good.
Because I have upgraded it to $100 a week.
Wow.
Instead of the whatever we were
good
doing for that.
Well, that's good. Well, you'll get there then.
It's going to take a
while. What's the goal, like 2 years? Because the girls are how old?
Fifth grade and third grade.
So if you did in 2 years, seventh grade, fifth grade, I think that's still a really good age.
You think so?
Yeah, because my daughter, Anna, is in seventh grade.
Okay.
And I think she would still totally enjoy Disney, especially if she had a little sister to go with.
Oh,
now,
cool.
With her two brothers, they'd probably beat the hell out of each other. It wouldn't be that fun for anybody. The triplets tonight headed off to their very first ever grade school dance.
Are they all snazzied up?
No. This ended up being a very casual affair.
Oh, okay.
And that wasn't like our kids' just choice, but all the kids were, no, we're going casual, we're all going casual. So all the boys, a very nice mom, had all the boys over to their house. There's nine boys in the class. And all the girls went over to one of the girls' houses before the dance. Another nice mom had kids over. And then they all headed off to the dance. Michael texted me from the dance and with a quick picture, and he said, "Everybody's standing around, nobody's doing anything." And I told him, "That's kind of how these things go. Get out there and get it started."
Yeah.
And he texted me back and said, "We've got them all going to Sweet Caroline."
Oh,
I don't
man.
Know if he started that or what exactly happened there, but I'll be very interested. Yeah. They were asleep by the time I got up to head down to work, so I don't know how the night all turned out. But I'll be very curious tomorrow to see if there was any dancing. I've been doing a wonderful job of just embarrassing the snot out of my children by trying to learn how to do the floss dance.
Well, is that where the arms go flying out in both directions?
Jess, can you floss dance? Turn on your microphone, your real one. I just love that every week for however many years we're here, I have to remind Jess that there is a microphone, a real one. There's one that, for those of you who don't know, here's what happens. We have like an intercom system where Jess can hit a button and talk just into my ear, just into Roger's ear.
Right.
So we get a little instruction like, you got to take a break, or you've got to read that live, or you've got to do whatever, introduce the news without everybody hearing it. But then there's a big microphone next to her that she could hit another button and actually talk to everybody.
Yeah.
And every week, Jess chooses to have conversations that should be on the air just in our ears while we're talking to each other. So we just get as confused as possible.
I'm just like a little birdie.
She did that to me twice just while we were just talking. One was on the pizza and one was on the fund update. And both times I couldn't tell if she was in my ear or on the air.
See, luckily I have the advantage of seeing what she's doing. I'm like, Jess.
Tweet, tweet. Anywho, back to the flossy story.
Do you floss dance?
I'm still trying to understand what it is. Like,
you're flossing your teeth. You take the string and go back and forth, and you're flossing. Your arms go in both directions.
Your arms go in front, then they go in the back. Your hips are going back and forth.
Yeah.
Tommy can really floss well, and Anna can floss well, and I think Michael does a fine job. When I'm trying to learn how, and they're like, "Dad, you're not doing this. You're not doing that." Blah, blah.
Right.
So I keep threatening. So when we drop the kids off at school every morning, and I drop them off almost every morning, or at least 3 or 4 days a week. There's a big like carpool that they pull up. And like 6 cars will stop at a time. The kids get out, and then those cars move along. The next set move up. And I keep saying, I'm going to get out in front.
You don't.
In front of all the kids. Oh, Tommy gets so upset. Dad, don't you do that.
Roger.
And he's like ready to lose it.
What?
Is that really what it means?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Isn't there a like?
That's why they call it floss. I don't know what else floss means.
I'm actually pretty sure Roger's right on this one.
What? Okay, somebody needs to call in and confirm this for me.
I mean, it might be something else that we might not be able to talk about, but I don't think that has anything to do with it.
I'm going
to
go out on a limb and say that our listenership is not real hip on the floss dance.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get that call, Jess.
Hmm.
But if anybody out there is hip to the floss dancing, 312-981-7200, you may explain it to Jess. But yeah, it sort of looks like you're actually flossing. Did you look it up, Jess? Look up a GIF on floss dancing.
Yeah, I got floss.
And you'll see the quick movement. I think it became famous during like Katy Perry's Super Bowl show or something like that. Or some show Katy Perry was doing. Kid was flossing like crazy in the background.
Media, you are correct.
All the kids
media outlets have commented that the dance is harder to perform than it appears.
It's hard for adult parents to catch on to it. I'll tell you that much. Here's we sit there in the house and we're trying to do it, and the kids are looking at us like, "Oh my god!" And I'm like, I've totally turned into my parents. This, I am now my mom who couldn't figure out how the hell to record a show on the VCR. And here I am doing this back and forth. They're like, "No, that's not how." And I'm just totally turned in. I'm ready to.
And
set
your
up
kids have turned into who you were when you were trying to explain to your mom how to record a show on VHS, right?
I remember. Do you remember Mike Farron?
Yes.
Mike Farron was longtime producer of Sports Central here when we had the weeknight Sports Central show.
Yeah, yeah.
Mike, now the voice of the Arizona Diamondbacks, doing great. And I remember this is when John did afternoons, and then Sports Central came on afterwards. And I forget what show I wanted taped, and I forgot to set up to record. When you'd have the VCR that you would actually program times to record, which is amazing. I think we used to do that. And so John's show is ending. Sports Central's taking over. I'm in the producer booth, and I'm calling home. This is after the triplets were born, so my mom's in the house.
Right.
And I said, "Mom, I need you to record. Show's coming up right now in just a couple minutes. You know, we got off the air at 7, show was coming." I'm like, "Would you put the TV on NBC and just hit record on the VCR?" And she's like, "Okay, sure. Hold on. Okay. Let's see. Here's the VCR. And I'm like, yeah, the record button is three buttons over. It's red. It's got the red dot and like a play thing. And you just hit that. And then it goes, okay. All right, hold on. We've got power.
Oh, no.
And she reads through all the buttons. And I'm like, this show's going to be over. You got power. And then there's rewind and fast forward and stop. And then, so is it like a pause and a red? Yeah, you hit that. Okay, hold on. So let me hit that. All right, now it's not doing anything. Like, well, it'll start. The numbers aren't moving. Okay, now the numbers are moving. Well, what channel? Am I in the right channel? The VCR is on channel 3. Do I put the VCR on channel 5? No, the VCR stays in channel. Well, I don't see. And this was like 15 minutes, and Mike Farron was crying, listening just to my end of this conversation. Sorry, Mom. If you're awake and listening, Mom, I love you so much, and you were so sweet to do it, and I am turning into you.
Oh, God.
Yes, Jess.
Did
you look up the floss dance? Did you see it?
I did see it. You were correct about the Katy Perry statement.
Okay. And do you think you can floss dance?
No, I cannot.
Okay.
I can only dance to the Hokey Pokey.
Oh, my God. Well, that's bad.
The origin of the name.
But that is what it's all about.
It's a lot of fast arm and hip swings as though using a huge invisible piece of dental floss.
There you go.
When I have kids, Matt, I hope I'm as cool as you.
As embarrassing as me?
No.
Believe me, if you had Michael Ann and Tommy right now, and you said to Tommy, I hope I'm as cool as your dad, he would look at you like you're an alien that just sprouted a second head, because he does not think there's anything cool. I was giving him a hard time tonight. So the triplets all got phones for their birthday, and they all brought their phones with tonight, and I wouldn't have let them do that if I saw that happening. So Tommy's got his phone at this friend's house. I'm like, give me that phone. He's like, Michael has his, Anna has hers. I'm like, I don't want you sitting on that phone all night. Oh, man. Yeah.
By the way, you know of Fortnite?
Of course I know of Fortnite. The kids live for the Fortnite these days.
Flossing is featured in the 2017 really? Video game Fortnite as a dance that can be performed by the characters while playing.
I did not know that. I did not know that.
And now you know.
And that's one to grow on with Hal Linden. Yes, Jess.
I'm sorry. I have another quick question.
Oh, please.
Do we have
to take a break.
Okay. Do your kids still think that your laugh is embarrassing?
Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding me? Tommy especially is mortified when I start laughing. And if he gets nasty or is mean to me and we're in public, I'll look at him and I'll go, and I'll start. And I'll be like, shut up. Don't you dare. Don't you dare. We're in public.
I love your laugh. It's so jolly.
All right, first of all, Jess, don't ever tell somebody that their laugh is jolly. You might as well just say, you're so fat and happy. Do not call my laugh jolly.
Your laugh makes me happy.
That you can say, but don't ever say,
it reminds me of
Christmas. You're so jolly. Don't say that either. Now I sound like a fat man.
No, you're not.
Thank you for saying that, but that's what you feel like. You're so jolly, you make me feel like Christmas. What do you think the picture is?
Rings.
Oh, Jess.
It's only because I love you.
Yeah. You don't get to call somebody fat and then say, but I love you.
When did I say that? Roger, back me up.
No,
here.
He's not. He's knowing exactly what I'm saying. You don't tell somebody they sound jolly.
What's wrong with being happy?
There's nothing wrong with being happy, but jolly.
Jolly,
is either a pirate or a fat old man. There's only two ways to go with that. So don't ever tell somebody.
I'm jolly.
Jolly
Roger.
Life lessons for people. Yeah. You never look at a woman and ask her when she's due.
Right.
And you never tell somebody who's laughing, you sound so jolly.
Right.
Because that just makes me.
Unless
your belly shakes when you laugh.
Unless their belly is shaking, they have a red nose and a big white beard.
Yeah.
Then you can say
that person. Or you know
that
they're okay with being fat.
Right.
If they're like, I know, blah, 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 then sure. But if somebody's like, oh, man, I got to really lose these pounds, but order the pizza, then you don't call them jolly. I'm not helping myself. I complain about being fat, and then I walk in, we got to order pizza. It's hard to stay up all night, people. All right, 312-981-7200. We lost Roger. We'll get him back in time for the news. Our old friend, Andrew Wittenberg. He is from KSL, right? KSL Morning News in Utah. He's our good friend who covered the Olympics, and we talked to him during the Olympics the whole time in Korea, right? He's going to come out with us because two big stories out of Utah this week. One of the captors of Elizabeth Smart was released from prison this week.
Yeah, I saw that.
And also, North and South Korea are pitching in Olympics together.
Right.
So Andrew's going to update us on all of that after Roger checks the news next on 720 WGN. On November 6th, you have the power to influence the course of politics by following the most comprehensive local political news online at chicagotribune.com/midterms. November 6th is going to be quite an evening. In fact, speaking of that, later in the show, I know Roger's been playing a little audio. I have had Jess pulling some. We'll talk about the big debate. Ted Cruz and Beto O'Rourke's faced off for the first time in Texas. We'll talk about that a little bit. We'll talk about the latest on the Kavanaugh proceedings and where that's headed in the coming week. But we've got to do the news and then check in with our friend Andrew Wittenberg, hopefully, if we can wake him up in Utah after this. News headlines. Here's Mr. Badish. Matt Bavala with you here, 720 WGN.
Everybody, sing along. See,
everybody at the 7th grade dance going to not dancing, probably, but maybe singing.
They were
along.
Probably just singing, yeah.
I'll get a complete report out of Michael for next weekend on the show. By the way, real quick before we get to Andrew, so I was talking about my mom and saying how old I feel now that I can't floss dance and I embarrass my children.
Right.
And I was telling the story about my mom having trouble working the VCR. And it turns out that mom was listening.
Oh, no.
Now, I'll give mom credit. While she couldn't work a VCR back in the day, when I offend her on the radio, she can text awfully fast.
Oh, man, can
so
she?
So she's come along. So what's great about my mom, and there are so many things, and I love my mom. I love my mom dearly.
Yeah.
And but she is good with the guilt real quick, just real fast with the quick. So I'm and I said, right? Didn't I say I love my mom?
Yes, you did.
I said all that, right?
A little after the fact, but
yeah,
go ahead.
Well, you always got to, you know, make sure you clear things up at the end. So I get this text from mom. Oh, it hurts to have an ungrateful child. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it hurts to have an ungrateful child. I wrote back in all caps, like I'm Trump in the middle of the night going crazy, yelling collusion. I just wrote, I also said how much I love you, Mom! That's... with a bunch of exclamation points.
Yeah, though that don't matter much now.
No. She writes back very calmly.
Yeah.
Let me weigh the pros and cons of making fun of dear old mom. Say you love mom afterwards. I'll have to do some thinking on it. Love you too.
Oh, that's precious.
Thank you, mom.
We love you, mom.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. We also love our old buddy Andrew Wittenberg from KSL in Salt Lake City, Utah. He's had quite a busy week. We haven't talked to Andrew since way back when the Olympics were on. Hey, Andrew, good morning. How are you, sir?
Hey, Matt, how are you? A long time to talk.
I know, it has been. It's been a long time since the Olympics ended, which was, when were the Olympics? It was back in February, right?
Yeah, February, yeah. Pretty much the whole month of February.
Yeah, so it's been about a half year. Has it been nice? When you first got back, since I don't think we talked to you after you returned home, how was it first being back? What was the best thing? Was it, you know, seeing your young child and your wife, or was it just getting in the, I'm sure that we'll separate that, because of course that was the best thing ever. But your own bed, getting back on the time zone, American food, what was like, oh, thank God we're home? What was the biggest thing right away?
Yeah, both times I've done the Olympics in Rio and South Korea, it was definitely trying to find some American junk food pretty quick, you know, aside from the... from just hanging out with the fam. But it's trying to sit down, find a nice greasy burger or a good pizza, sure. Like I hear you guys have in studio tonight. Something like that to get it going.
Yes, we're terrible in the middle of the night. We do order pizza in the middle of the night. So you've been back.
Everything's good, man.
We're good here. You're back on the morning show at KSL. I see your pictures every morning. You're very good with the social media and saying good morning to everybody and getting the day started. I don't get to see the show, of course, because we're here in Chicago, but I see your posts almost daily. You're very good with doing that. So there was a lot of news in Salt Lake City this week. Well, a lot of news on the Elizabeth Smart case, but then I also want to ask you about Olympics because North and South Korea, and so let's stay in the Olympics for just a second. North and South Korea are going to pitch an Olympics together. And when you were there, you know, there was a lot, you know, at first it was like nervousness about being in South Korea because there had been so much talk between Trump and Korea and threats and Rocket Man and all that stuff that at first we were like a little nervous. Then Korea sends a delegation. Kim Jong-un's sister is there. So things started thawing maybe during those Olympics a little bit. And now here we are to the point that they're actually pitching an Olympics together. Would you have guessed when you were there that this could really start building towards something like this?
I don't think anyone would have guessed that. Man, what a weird and wild period of time. I mean, who would have thought even a year ago that that would have even been possible, what we saw in South Korea, and then especially now. Yeah, going back, and I mean, you hope it's all good, and I think everybody sort of has a little bit of sense of trepidation maybe about it. But yeah, I mean, apparently things are moving forward quite well to that point where they're trying to put together this unification bid for 2032, I believe, in the Summer Games of 32. I mean, it seems like everything's going well. It seems like things are going down the right path. And if this is something, you know, you look back on decades later or something and find out that the Olympics of 2018 seemingly put an end to what a 60-year standoff between the North and the South. I mean, that's pretty unbelievable, and I think it's maybe really awesome, maybe a great step for those two countries to have been able to, you know, put over what all the differences that have been built up over decades to unify in a sense. I mean, it is quite frankly, I mean, almost unbelievable. One of those stories, and who knows what's going on behind the scenes? I mean, I think that's the more interesting aspect of what is actually happening in those sort of back channel communications, if you will, that has made this even possible. And what, if any, role did the United States play with this summit they had in the spring and early summer? We understand there's going to be another summit, perhaps, with the United States involved, the denuclearization, and all sort of intertwined with this Olympics news. I mean, it's just almost wild to even believe that it's possible, but apparently that's what the deal is. The 2032 unified Korea bid to once again host an Olympics. And it's, you know, certainly amazing. I think it's great news, but I would be shocked if everybody wasn't going into it with a little bit of a degree of like I say, trepidation about, sure, well, is this really happening? After all of the anxiety and angst and tough talk and action and the wall and the border and everything else, the DMZ that's been built up over these years.
Well, and even if this doesn't completely come to fruition, what we can say, though, is just the things that have happened in the last year haven't happened in the last 50 years, right? These two meeting and shaking hands at the, right? And they met at the line at the, like, that DMZ zone where wherever the line is. And wasn't the South Korean leader just in North Korea this week at some sacred mountain that he'd always wanted to visit? So the thawing really has begun. Where it goes, I guess we don't know. And of course, there's trepidation and, you know, reticence on how far this really will go, but even if it doesn't go much farther, it seems that they've really made some progress just in at least being willing to talk to each other about things at this point, right?
An amazing step, yeah. I mean, for a sitting South Korean president to go to Pyongyang for a summit to seemingly, I mean, Kim Jong-un and Moon Jae-in, they actually hugged on the tarmac when he landed, when President Moon landed. Pretty unbelievable. And yeah, certainly to go take a nice day hike up a mountain and have all these talks about denuclearization. I mean, this is just unheard of, you know, months ago. So yeah, I think everyone is as stunned as we are, but I mean, it certainly seems like things are progressing in the right direction there.
So Andrew, since you've been out there to South Korea for the Winter Olympics and you're just more aware of the location, a joint Olympics in Pyongyang and Seoul, does that even make sense, like logistically? Are those, how far away are those two areas from each other?
I want to say it's about 125 miles or so, give or take. The DMZ, the demilitarized zone, is probably, I mean, it's a couple hours. Well, so it spans the whole country. So the closest point, it is north of Seoul. I want to say it's about 60 miles north of Seoul is the closest point, but it goes the whole basically east-west border along the middle part of the Korean Peninsula. So it wouldn't be the easiest logistically, but I mean, I think certainly if you look at Pyongyang, I want to say it's, 100 to 200 miles north. They talked about the winter bid. Even there was chatter before these Winter Olympics that, would South Korea try to extend an olive branch and put maybe one of the skiing venues in a North Korean ski resort. I don't think it ever really came close to panning out, but that was sort of rumored, and there had been some discussions about it when they were first trying to get the North Koreans to come to the table and participate in these Olympics. I think it's possible. It certainly wouldn't be the easiest logistically, but I mean, we're talking about a city with an international airport, as it were, in Pyongyang to the north, albeit quite restricted as of now. But yeah, I mean, I think it's possible, but it certainly wouldn't be, maybe the easiest logistically. Maybe something like you were talking about, Chicago, Milwaukee, or Chicago, Detroit. I don't know how the specific distances there, right. But I mean, it would be a considerable. Yeah, they're not just like border cities right next, bumped up to each other.
But I guess if it's 2032, even if they were to award this in the next 4 years and give them a 10-year head start, I mean, maybe they would build some sort of bullet train infrastructure. Maybe there's something they could do to make it feasible. They certainly would have to figure out a way to kind of open up the borders between each other a little bit, at least for those 3 weeks, to let people go back and forth, right? I mean, they'd really have to come to the table and make some nice agreements with each other if that were to work out.
Which is certainly possible. As far as the actual transportation goes, they put in the high-speed rail system just for these past Olympics in Pyeongchang from Seoul. I mean, they put in a high-speed rail line just for those games. So I think you're talking about something that's a possibility. The thought, though, even just to think that would be possible, that those two, where there have been decades of families split up and separated that haven't hardly seen each other, to even think that those barriers would even be possible, the fact that we're even talking about it is pretty wild. South Korea typically a stronger winter Olympics market or country than Summer Olympics, but certainly a huge population, 20 million people or so, a little under, I think, in Seoul and that surrounding metro area, massive city. Wow. They have a population that loves the Olympics. They have a country and a region that has endeared themselves to the Olympics. They have shown a propensity for liking to host. I mean, we're in the midst now of three consecutive games that will be in Asia, between Korea, then Tokyo in 2020 for the next summer games, and then Beijing in 22. I think it's a possibility again, but I mean, I think the headline of it all is like, what in the world is going on here? And amazing as it is, I think there's definitely some curiosity. Is this even possible? Is the big headline.
Well, and it's probably a good time for them to be doing this because the Olympics are in a bit of a state right now where they're sometimes having trouble. I know they just announced these next few games in Paris and Los Angeles, but they're kind of at a crossroads where it's very expensive and they're not getting as many bids as they'd like. So it might be an opportune time for the Koreas to approach them, right?
Yeah, the news came this week that, which is oftentimes sad for those of us who have been to an Olympic city, that South Korea is looking to actually start to tear down some of those venues from Pyeongchang just, 6-7 months after the games. And that has been a consistent theme going back a long, long time, is that some of these venues have just gone by the wayside in many of the cities. And, I'd be reticent not to mention the fact that our mayor from Salt Lake City right now is in Colorado Springs for the U.S. Olympic Committee meetings, where they're still putting forward more pressure on the USOC to make sure that they know that Salt Lake would be interested in a future Olympic bid. The facilities here that have been maintained, they're very interested in hosting another Olympics. It looks like it would be primarily the interest would be towards 2030, because with Los Angeles getting the 2028 Summer Games, you don't want to step in front of all the marketing deals and all the ad buildup to a big Summer Games because the money is a little bit better and a little bit higher for the Summer Games as far as TV and ad revenues go. But Salt Lake, Denver, and the Reno, Tahoe area are three cities that I believe all have representatives in Colorado Springs right now, pushing for an American bid in an upcoming Winter Olympics in 26 or 30. And that was the word of the talk this week. These cities are backing out of 26. So much like what happened with Paris and Los Angeles, where they did a joint bid between 24 and 28, does the United States jump in and try to be part of a joint bid for 26 and 30 if they're going to start awarding multiple games at one time, which was unheard of from the IOC just 6 months ago or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting, and I think it's one of those situations where, yeah, they're going to start having to realize that the money is just unrealistic for many of the cities, even if they have the public support to do them, which those cities are few and far between. The cities in Europe that have pulled out most recently, I believe there's one in Austria. There have been others, one in Italy that pulled out. Norway, I believe Lillehammer pulled out. It's primarily because of public support. There's a lack of it. It's not initiatives or even fundraising or money. As much as it is, public support just isn't there to try to make this giant, and it is a burden. I mean, people talk about Chicago, how they missed out on 16. It's a considerable burden on a large metropolitan city for a month, not to mention the buildup and the hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, that go into it.
I can't remember how Paris and Los Angeles came together. Was it just those two Olympics, or is it going to go back to Paris then again after Los Angeles? Or no, that wasn't part of the deal?
No, it's just, yeah, I think they agreed that there was sort of a backroom deal between
each other for one. They said, let's bid on these two different years together. That's how it worked out?
Yeah, it was sort of interesting. I don't even really know that the full story is out there, because the public version of it was, well, Paris and Los Angeles, two historic hosting cities for summer games, are both interested in hosting summer games. The big push was for Los Angeles to host in 24, but Paris had also put in the same time, and they just kind of came out. I believe it was in South America, or maybe Peru or somewhere, where they had this big meeting or this big decision, this big announcement from the IOC, and they said, hey, while we're here, we're just going to go ahead and award both games to these individual cities. And LA was like, I guess we're fine hosting in 28, and if it means the difference between not getting them at all or hosting 4 years later, we'll take it. And so there you had it. It was Paris, which will be on the 100-year anniversary of Paris hosting in 2024. I think there was some sentimental reasoning behind that, sort of like we had in Athens, Greece. They had pitched when they were coming about that big, 100 celebration after Atlanta. There was a pitch for Athens to get a games. And so I think we're seeing the same thing with Paris. They would like to have it on the 100-year anniversary of their 24 games, and then Los Angeles being in there right after, because they had such a big support. They had such a big campaign going as a candidate city for 2024. I think the sentiment would still be there for 28, so they said, yeah, we'll do it.
You know, it's interesting, because I think you and I have talked about this before. Because of the expense, because of the buildup, and because of these cities that have had problems then with what do we do with these buildings afterwards, I don't understand why Paris should have 2024 and then, say, 2032. Like, give it to them twice. Give them something to build for, and then in between those 8 years, you'll host these national events and these international events, so these venues make sense, and then have a rotating thing. So every couple of years now, I don't know if NBC, who pays billions of dollars, be like, we don't want to go to these places twice within 8 years, but I can't imagine that much of the TV aspect depends on this new location. NBC does such a good job of telling the individual stories that, especially if the IOC keeps having problems kind of finding the places, they're going to have to offer better incentives, I would think, to get people to spend $100-some million on a 3-week event. I know here in Chicago, Andrew, when that was going on, I was really excited about the idea. Most of the city was crabby about the idea of the Olympics. People did not want the headaches of it. I was really surprised at the angst it was drawing on us making that bid. And the bid itself, which was all privately raised donations, cost like $72 million just for the bid. It was insane.
Yeah, it is tremendous, the cost. I mean, you think about essentially shutting down an entire city for a month, which on a very idealistic, you know, standpoint, you're like, oh, well, it's a month. You know, what's the big deal? This is great to have the exposure. It's great to have the eyes of the world on our city. And certainly Chicago obviously has so much culturally to offer. And as far as athletics goes, one of the unparalleled cities in the world. But yeah, I think it's difficult to get the average mainstream person to look at this and say, this is a good idea, because you're virtually guaranteed nothing on the back end. Most cities have venues which falter within a year, or certainly 2 to 4 years after the Olympics, these venues go unused. And I think, again, that's what is, you know, the city leaders and state leaders in Utah have championed, and that's why they try to do that. There's been a sentiment, particularly on the winter side of these games, that there would be maybe 3 rotating host cities, maybe 4. So every 12 or 16 years, you're going back to these places. So they, number one, have something to look forward to keep the facilities and the venues up and running. And then number two, so there aren't games in cities that don't want them. So you look at maybe like a Salt Lake or a Denver or a Reno Tahoe for the United States to host, or a North American city. I doubt Vancouver would be a great option. But maybe like a, I don't know, Calgary or something for the winter games in North America. And then maybe a city in Norway for the European winter games that rotate, and then a city in Asia. So it would be not a tremendous difficulty for travel around the world every 12 years, but that would also expose different areas of the world for the games and different cultures and people. Whereas the summer, it's a little bit more varied as to who can host. You know, there's obviously a lot of cities that that have the ability in North America, South America, Europe, Asia. There's a lot of more variety there. But winter markets, it's tough. You got to find a place with a big international airport, with the mountain venues, with the coastal venues. And so that's why I think that sentiment is there. I think you got a little bit more flexibility in the summer.
Andrew, I'd really love to talk a little bit about Elizabeth Smart, but I've got to do the news. Can you hang on for a couple more minutes and chat a little more?
Absolutely.
All right, excellent. Hold on 1 second. Coming up, the stories that matter with Roger Badish from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Get to the news right after this. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn a little bit after 2 in the morning. Let's check the news now.
Pour yourself something cold, baby, cheers.
I was just trying to floss.
Sometimes you
did not do it well. Matt Bobala with you, 720 WGN. Hopefully the cameras did not pick
I
that
missed
up.
It by a split second.
Well, you need to start practicing, Roger.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's not going to...
Get the overnight flossing crew going. Andrew,
really?
Yes, that's what we're going to do. Our buddy Andrew Wittenberg from KSL in Salt Lake City, Utah is still on the phone with us. Andrew, have you ever done the floss dance?
I've not yet. You know, I've seen so many kids doing it.
Yes.
And my little guy is still a little young yet to have picked it up. But everywhere you go, these kids are doing it. It's wild, huh?
The good thing for you is your son is young enough that he's not yet embarrassed by you, because my youngest, my triplets are 13. And so when I say, oh, I'm going to floss, they freak out. Like, don't you dare.
Oh, no.
Don't you dare.
That is total dad embarrassment right there.
God, I love being the embarrassing dad.
I'm afraid I'm going to break something doing it.
You might,
at
Roger.
My age.
You might lose a hip.
Yeah.
You might just throw a hip right out.
Yeah.
So, Andrew, let's talk for a couple of minutes on a more serious note about the Elizabeth Smart case. And one of her kidnappers, Wanda Barzi, was released this week. Take us back, because it's been a long time, and give us the 60-second refresher on what happened here. Elizabeth Smart was a teenager who was kidnapped. How many years later was it when she was discovered and found?
Man, that story is such a big one here in Utah. And oddly enough, sort of tied into the Olympics that we were just talking about before the break there. In a span of 6 months, 8 months, we had September 11th, 2001. We had been hosting the Winter Olympics February 2002. And then about 3 months later, Elizabeth Smart was 14 years old, taken from her home in an affluent area right in essentially downtown Salt Lake City by a man who's serving a life sentence right now, Brian David Mitchell. And was basically held captive for 9 months, and between California and here in Utah, and then ultimately was discovered like walking out of a grocery store, if I'm not mistaken, with this guy. Elizabeth Smart was found, seen by just an onlooker. I mean, all the national networks were here. It was such big news as that 24-hour media cycle had really started to crank up in the early 2000s, and she was just found. And just as seemingly as big of a story as it had been on that period of time in late 2002, it was sort of, not to say over, but it was just so shocking that they were just walking the streets down in Sandy, which is about 15 miles or so south in a suburb of Salt Lake. And so anyway, Brian David Mitchell goes away. He's serving a life sentence, but it was his wife, this Wanda Barzee, who was a co-conspirator. She was found to be complicit with all of the torture and the sexual abuse that was ongoing for those 9 months. Was just released this past week, a few days ago. It's a fascinating turn in this case, and Elizabeth Smart and the whole family was, as you can imagine, quite upset by it and the circumstances that surrounded it. But yeah, she is a free woman here in Utah as of Wednesday.
And so in July, Barzee was denied parole, but then after further review and advice from legal counsel, I'm reading a story, that was the quote, they realized they must credit her time in federal prison toward her current term in state custody on top of time she had already served in jail in a state hospital. So basically they had added up wrong, and now it's not just whether or not she's denied parole, but she's actually served all the time that she was ordered to serve. Is that what basically happened?
Basically, yeah. So there was federal charges and state charges that came about as a result of this whole thing. She was deemed unfit to stand trial for, I want to say, close to 7 years. So you do the math here, from 2002 to 2018, it's 16 years. She was found unfit to stand trial, was in, I believe, the Utah State Hospital for 7 years, and then ultimately did go to trial, was found guilty, and in that period, she was given 1 to 15 years federal sentence and 1 to 15 years from a state sentence. And so the decision that came this week, or actually came a couple of weeks ago when we found out she was going to be released, was that they had not been giving her credit for time served while she was in the state hospital, 7 years. So here we are. It was supposed to be right at 2024, I think, was the year she was supposed to be released, is what everybody had thought. But by that point, another, 6 years from now, she would have been 78 years old. So she's 72 years old now. But then the news came that, you know, they'd not been giving, it's this whole concurrent versus consecutive, the way they determine sentences and who is getting credit for what time served. And they just said, well, hey, we made a mistake because we haven't given her credit for the 7 years, basically, that she was in state custody in the hospital. And while trying to become fit for trial, or they were attempting to find someone that would deem her fit for trial. And so they decided that they had not given her enough credit for time served. And ultimately they said, hey, her sentence is going to run out because of how this is all handled, and she was released early Wednesday morning.
I don't remember the trial or anything like that because it's so long ago now, but in reading what Elizabeth Smart was saying this week, that she stood right by there, she encouraged him, it's surprising to me that she got such a soft sentence in a way. I mean, I know 20 years or so is a good sentence, but he's got two life sentences for this, and she is a co-conspirator, even if she wasn't the one sexually abusing her, encouraging it, as Elizabeth Smart said, being right there for it. Are you surprised? Do you remember how this went down, or did they write it all this week about why she got such a smaller sentence compared to her husband?
You know, I don't think anyone ever really thought that she would see the light of day again. And so the fact that it came about,
and she testified
so suddenly,
against him, I suppose, so that probably helped her too in her sentencing, right?
Sure. Yeah, there was a lot going on there, and that's a little before my time in Utah when the trial was happening in 2009. But the sort of view from 30,000 feet on that is that she cooperated with authorities. She essentially copped to all the charges and helped put away the kidnapper. For life, essentially. He'll never see the light of day again. But then I think everybody sort of thought, I mean, she's 72 years old. Wait a second. What is that going to put her like at 54, you know, when she was first found and this whole process started, you know, 16 years ago? So she'd have been 56. So she's 56. I think people think, all right, 1 to 15, 1 to 15, and she serves the max, and you do the math. Well, she's not really, if she ever does see the light of day, she'll be older and not able to impart any of this just viciousness and awful crime upon anyone else. Well, then all of a sudden, here it comes, and she's 72, and she's, you know, relatively, I guess, decent health enough, you know, to get up and walk out of prison. Although there is still some health concerns there, both mental and physical. I don't think anyone really thought about it for all this time. And then all of a sudden when the news comes, I think that's the biggest reaction, is that, wait a second, how did this person that did perhaps the most evil of torture and complicit in watching, and oh my gosh, the details are just horrific. How could this happen? And I think that's what the big shock is here. And both Utah nationally this week, is that how did this seemingly slip under the cracks when there really wasn't any sort of slip under the cracks? It was just sort of the way the penalties worked and time served, and here we are. But it's just a sort of perplexing story, as she's now out here and, you know, sort of supervised release right now for a period of 5 more years. So it's not like she's actually just, you know, scot-free kind of thing, but there's certainly a lot to it and a lot of shock and awe here.
Yeah, what was the public reaction to it? Is the public understanding of this, or is there a lot of anger towards the judicial system that is letting this woman out much earlier than was expected?
Yeah, I think it's mixed. I think you have the, well, she served her time crowd, and, you know, she should, under the penalty of the law, she should be allowed to, you know, try to live whatever remaining life she has left. Albeit here in Utah, that's going to be quite substantial because, I mean, she's as recognized of a face as anyone.
Yeah.
And then I think you have the other crowd of people who say, well, wait a second, what is going on here? Like, we need to address this, or this is not right, just because of the horrific nature of this crime and this abduction. And this just isn't like a one-off thing. I mean, it's not like a small misdemeanor or something. This is incredibly significant violations of someone. And, you know, I think people that just weren't, well, she'll never see the light of day again. I think it was sort of out of sight, out of mind for all these years. And no one was really crossing the T's, dotting the I's. In the meantime, attorneys in the background are working and doing what they can for their client. Because she has a federally appointed attorney,
right,
and saying, hey, wait a second here, this wasn't calculated right. You know, the whole, what was getting the time on the federal sentence, because she was in, she served her federal sentence and she gets kicked back on the state charges, and that's only a couple years. So she ran out of her federal sentence in 2016, and then the state sentence just ran out, essentially. And so because she got all that time served, or a credit for time served, when she was in the Utah State Hospital. So I don't know. There's two crowds, and they're both very vocal. We saw sort of on social media and whatnot in Utah this week. But boy, I mean, it's just another gut-wrenching turn in this story that so many people here have followed for, what, 16 years. It's tough.
Elizabeth Smart herself, I know, was speaking out about this week coming up and leading up to the release. So she was public. Has she been very public over the years? I know she's moved on. She's married. She has kids. And once in a while, you'll see her in People magazine, things like that. But there in Utah, is she a public figure, or does she mostly just go about trying to lead her own life?
Well, she still lives here in Utah, which is, you know, I would imagine tough in and of itself, because she is such a recognizable face here. She does the speaking circuit, a lot of motivational speaking.
Okay.
I believe she has a rather large charitable foundation about surviving sexual abuse, and does a lot of good work. She and her father both do a lot of community and charity work in trying to raise money and help and be victims advocates, that sort of thing. But so, yeah, still very much here in the forefront in not only Utah, but on the national speaking circuits and things like that as well, raising awareness, sort of thing. So they're very, yes, out there in the public eye. She and her father have both been very outspoken, in the past 2 weeks about this, how they were unhappy about the, and I hesitate to call it a loophole, because it wasn't really a loophole. But they were hesitant, or that they were out speaking about how atrocious this is, that this was even possible in the first place, just that she would get out. You know, but that, again, that's a tough, when you talk about well, letter of the law and the sentencing and what charges were brought against her, you know, you would say, I guess, hey, she did her time, this Bar Z woman. But boy, that is a tough pill to swallow for someone who was abducted for 9 months and is now a wife and a mother herself. To stomach, and you can imagine why.
Yeah, absolutely, and especially raising two young kids, I just can't imagine. And it is surprising to think that, you know, I imagine everybody thought, well, she'll never see the light of day again, but if she was only 56, 20 years, and with life expectancy, this day was bound to come, you know. So I wonder if what's going on with elections up there? Will this be a political football at all? That how could we have let this happen?
You know, I don't know. We do have a significant election this year, and I don't know that this will really come to bubble in the surface of it. But the Senate race to replace Orrin Hatch, and Mitt Romney is a candidate for Senate,
right?
And facing a Democratic challenger, Jenny Wilson. It's presumed, you know, Romney has a massive lead in the polls here, so very popular. Obviously, he's a former presidential candidate. I don't know that this will rise to the level. I think this would be more on the state and local level where this would get a lot of play, and I just don't know that that connection will be made here in the next month and a half. But, you know, it's certainly, I mean, I think judicial practice and judicial law is something that isn't as sexy of a topic for politicians to dive into. It may become a talking point. There are some debates even coming up, I believe, next week to where it may be addressed, but I doubt it's anything that would rise to the level of being something that would move the needle for one candidate or the other, especially in a big national race, the Senate race, the U.S. Senate race here. But perhaps locally, yeah, but I just don't see it being something that really moves the needle.
All right, Andrew, the next Olympics will be Summer Olympics, and where is the next set at?
Well, let's see. It's Tokyo 2020, so just about a little less than two years away from Tokyo, and everybody's looking forward to that because there's been such a buildup for Tokyo and Japan. They've been so eager to get this. Technological advances, such a big and vibrant city in Asia. This is going to be a monstrous Games. I mean, you look back to, I'd say, London in 2012, maybe Atlanta in 96, or gosh, I mean, maybe Beijing in 08, but certainly this will be a monstrous Olympic Games. There'll be a lot of buildup, a lot of attention paid to it, and a lot of advertising dollars that we'll start to see ads for this, gosh, I would imagine, in 6 months to a year's time, with people starting to get ready to go down that qualifying process.
Yeah, that'll be cool. And I know it's far off, but your assumption that we'll be talking to you from there in a year and a half or 2 years, or is that
too far? Oh, man, no one would love it more than me. I don't know. We'll see.
All right.
It's an assignment like any other, you know, but it's great. I mean, obviously, it's an amazing assignment, and having done two now, I'd hope that would be an option for me, but yeah. We'll see. I mean, it's a competitive world out there to get into these Olympics, and especially from a coverage and a broadcasting standpoint, a lot of folks who would love that assignment. So hopefully I would really love to. I love the Olympics, man. It's been fun doing these past two.
I'm sure.
And albeit the time away from home, that is a massive downside, of course, but just to be on that world stage, it's a really cool thing. And no matter what's going on politically around the world, or even in a region like we saw in Korea or Rio and in Brazil, the world seems to come together. And I think that's one of the great things about this time right now is particularly interesting and amazing about the Olympics is that everyone just sort of puts everything aside and likes to enjoy the best that there is in sport.
Next time you're in Salt Lake City, turn on KSL and you'll see Andrew Wittenberg on the morning news. You can follow him on Twitter at @KSLAndrew. It's so much fun to chat with you. I really appreciate you staying up late for us. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, man. Good to talk to you. We'll be watching that North Side-South Side rivalry tomorrow for sure. Cubbies, man. Took one on the chin tonight, huh?
They did. The Sox stuck it to them pretty good tonight, so we'll see what happens.
Hey, well, you know, my Braves are looking good, though. I grew up down south in Nashville, so I'm a Braves guy. Braves looking pretty good. I heard you guys having that little discussion earlier.
Braves had quite a turnaround this year. That was unexpected. I mean, you didn't think they were going to be battling for division going into the season, did you?
Oh, no. Everybody thought they were 2 years away.
Yeah.
For sure. And then, you know, and a guy in Brian Snitker, their manager now, that has seemingly come from the assistant coaching ranks. Yeah, he's got them playing well.
Yeah. Well, we'll check in maybe during the playoffs then, Andrew. How about that?
Sounds good, buddy.
All right. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon. That is our friend Andrew Wittenberg from KSL in Salt Lake City. Okay, we got to take a break, catch up, do the news. Lots to do here at 312-981-7200 is the number. Matt Bobala with you on 720 WGN. I will tell you right now, people, if you travel more than once a year, TSA PreCheck is the best money you will ever spend on traveling. And don't just do TSA PreCheck. Do the, God, what do I have? One Pass Global Traveler. I don't know what it is. But you get TSA PreCheck every time you fly, and you also, when you re-enter the country, say you go to Canada or Mexico or somewhere, wherever, when you come back in and you have to go through
customs,
you can just go up to one of these. Sometimes there's hours-long lines in there. Sometimes it's very quick. It depends on when you come back. But if you have global entry, that's what it's called. If you have global entry, not only do you get TSA PreCheck, but when you go through that, you like go up, put your fingerprint on the thing, it recognizes you, boom, you get right through. You don't wait for 8 hours with everybody else. $100 for 5 years. Now, you have to go in for, you fill out a form online, they schedule you for an interview, you have to go in, be interviewed, fingerprinted, so they know who you are, they have all your data, whatever. But so worth it that every time you go to the airport, PreCheck automatically. I'm telling you, people. Pay for that. Chicago's biggest rivalry is on WGN TV. White Sox Cubs Crosstown Cup tonight at 6 on WGN TV Sports. 2:31 in the morning. Let's get some news headlines, Mr. Baddish. Matt Bubal here with you. 720 WGN. I believe that was it. Illinois, Raj.
Is someone texting in?
No, I looked it up on ESPN.
Oh, you did? All right, fine.
Yeah, they list Illinois on the bottom there, so I think they were the home team there.
Yeah, that's fine. Hey, go 30, ahead.
35-point fourth quarter for Penn State.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
That hurts.
How do you get the ball back quick enough to do that?
Unless there were like defensive stops?
Or a couple of pick sixes or
something. Yeah, could be.
Holy jim.
Yeah.
That's a
well,
quarter
let's see
right
here.
There.
Let's see. Hold on a second now. Where's my Illinois? Oh, wait a minute. They already switched that. Hold on a second. I got to find Illinois. Why do they do that so quick? Switch
well,
the scores.
You got to move on, Raj. It's a busy world.
I know. Here we go. Illinois. So Illinois was, let's see here. Going into the fourth quarter, Illinois was up 24-21. Going into the third, at the so Penn State at the end of the third quarter goes up 28
up,
to 24, and then added 35 more points
in the fourth
quarter,
just for good measure.
Just for
sometimes you got to do that.
Just for good measure. Let's see here. They're 10th ranked, so yeah, they've got to score more points. Miles Sanders for Penn State sets career highs, rushing for 200 yards and 3 touchdowns. Their quarterback threw for 3 touchdowns, ran for 92 yards. Penn State is 4-0 and now 1-0 in the Big Ten. Yeah, it...
Tough night for Lovie Smith and his gang.
Yeah.
They got to do better than that, that's for sure. Well, and what are the Cats doing this weekend? Are they playing tomorrow?
They're off. They got a bye week.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got a bye week.
They need one.
Yeah.
They got to get it back together, too. Okay, 312-981-7200. Going to take a quick break. Real quick, do you know who Millie Bobby Brown is? You know the show Stranger...
Bobby Brown?
Millie Bobby Brown.
Oh, no.
You know the TV show Stranger Things?
Yeah.
You heard of that, Jess?
Is that the girl's name?
Yeah, the main character is Millie Bobby Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Say that again, Jess.
Sorry, I love Stranger Things. I'm obsessed.
My daughter loves Stranger Things.
It's so good.
We're waiting for season three, which is taking forever to come out.
I know, right?
Well, Millie Bobby Brown is growing up very quickly. She started out very young in the show. Now she's like 15 years old.
And she was nominated, too, for the best actress.
Looking more and more like Natalie Portman in every photo that you see of her online. It's funny.
Really?
But she looks older than me.
Yeah, she started. She's looking old. There's one photo on her Instagram that they put in the story where she looks to me just like Natalie Portman, young Natalie Portman. But anyway, so there's a big story today that the rapper Drake and her have struck up this friendship.
Ooh.
But he's 31.
Ew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's also very good at flossing. Maybe that's what it is.
Have you seen her floss?
Yeah, she has videos on Instagram.
Oh, seriously? That's hilarious.
I follow her on Instagram.
How old is she?
She's only 15.
Okay.
And he's 31. And people are criticizing that today, that Drake has dated a bunch of... there was a story out about all these older celebrities who have been, quote, friends with girls when they're underage, and suddenly when they turn 18, they're dating. And there were stories out that he's grooming her, and she got very defensive about it and took to Twitter or took to Instagram to say, you know, I'm very blessed to have amazing people in my life. You don't get to choose that for me. It's nice to have people understand what I do, blah, blah, blah.
I thought she had a boyfriend.
Well, maybe she does. I don't know. But either way, it does seem odd that a 31-year-old man is becoming friends, even in the business, with somebody that age, and it does seem
well. Did you see the other story with Drake?
No.
So there's this young girl. I don't know if she's. I can't remember if she's a cancer patient or a transplant patient, like a kidney transplant. But she had tweeted out or sent out something about how much she loves Drake's music and everything, and he came to visit her in the hospital.
Well, that's nice.
And gave her his cell number. So now she can call him anytime she wants.
I'm going to assume that's still nice.
Yes.
And not weird.
That's a very nice gesture on his part. That's not weird at all.
Okay. How old is the...
She's got to be maybe 8, 9, 10.
Oh, okay. Really little.
Oh, yeah. Young. Yeah. Yeah. In the hospital.
Well, then that is
And there was
nice.
A picture of her with him and when he came to visit. Yeah.
Okay, well, I won't read any more into that. It's just a story that's out there. 312-981-7200. Quick break. Back at it after this on 720 WGN. 2:48 in the morning, 720 WGN. Thanks for staying up late with us, everybody. We're live from the Allstate Skyline Studio on the 18th floor in Wacker. Roger, have you passed by the Tribune Tower lately, our old home?
No, I haven't. I saw someone posted a picture of one of the front windows completely empty and void of any indication.
They've got it kind of blocked off now in front, like fencing around.
Okay.
You can still walk through on the sidewalk, but I think it's all blocked off like construction.
Okay.
And when I drive home, I'll go down Michigan Avenue up to Ontario.
You slow up?
Well, as you're crossing over the bridge and you look up, you can see the, where lights are on floors that they're just empty.
Been gutted.
Cleared out.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. I'd love to go back and just walk through there in a little skeleton.
I wonder if you can get in nowadays.
I'm sure you cannot.
Yeah.
Our IDs may probably... What if our ID... I still have my old ID from there.
Maybe it might work.
That
Who
would
knows?
Be hilarious. I'm guessing not, or that I'd be tackled and arrested afterwards. I probably don't need that on my record.
Nope.
Hey, by the way, so real quick. After our 5 years, I think it's been 5 years I've been doing this shift. If that's possible.
And I've been with you most of it.
Most of it.
Yeah.
Amazing. I think it's finally starting to pay off, Roger.
Really? We're going to Ishnala?
No. We're not there yet.
Jeez.
Baby steps, Roger. Baby steps.
Baby steps. Okay.
Getting there. I was as you know, I went to Las Vegas last week on business.
Right.
So Thursday morning, I'm at the airport. And I get there, and I'm going through. I have my TSA pre-check, because I do have that global entry. And I get in the TSA line, I get up to the front, and I hand my ID to the guy, and he looks at it like they do, and he goes, "Bubala, Bubala, Bubala, Matt Bubala from WGN Radio."
Oh my gosh!
And I said, "Why, yes, I am."
Like that?
No, but that's how I was feeling on the inside.
Yeah.
I said, "Well, yes, I am." And he said, "Get out of here! I got triplets too." And
the
great part was, there's people in line, right?
Uh-huh.
And he's got a partner there, and he's talking to the partner's like, "Who's this guy?" And he goes, "That's Matt Bubala from WGN Radio." And the guy goes, oh, he's not impressed at all.
Yeah, right.
And he goes, all right. And so then the guy keeps talking. He goes, take over for a minute. And he steps out.
Oh, no.
To chat with me.
Oh, my gosh. That's so awesome.
There's people in line going, who the hell is this jerk that you're talking to? Why is that guy getting talked to? And so we chatted for a minute. He also has triplets. His name was, I wrote it down, it's Kerry Lipinski.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Kerry, how are you listening to my show?
Yeah.
He said, morning shift starts here like at 3 a.m. I'm driving in.
Oh, my God.
So, Kerry, my favorite TSA agent, if you're out there, sir, have a great morning at the airport. I don't know if you're working this morning or not.
Oh, wait a minute.
I want to give you a little shout out.
So, he's driving in and listening on his car radio?
That's generally how this works, Roger. Yes.
I'm going to tell you why that's probably impossible.
What? Okay.
In Las Vegas, there is a radio station broadcasting
Roger,
on 720 a.m.
Roger. I was here at O'Hare.
Oh, at O'Hare. My bad.
Jesus.
I thought
no,
you said in Vegas.
No, they're not recognizing me
in Las Vegas. Well, who knows?
Baby steps, Roger! In Las Vegas. No, I was at O'Hare.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. Something... I could have sworn you said you were in Las Vegas.
I was traveling to Las Vegas.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed part of the story there.
I can't even get right.
I apologize.
Oh,
I'm on a pizza high here.
A pizza high, yes. Anyways, Kerry Lipinski, TSA.
Nice.
Here in Chicago.
Yes.
He's got triplets.
Uh-huh.
I think they're in this. Did he say they're in eighth grade or they're in seventh grade? He's got young triplets, like me.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a sophomore in college. So he's kind of got the whole
thing. Wow. That's a big gap.
I'm like, so what are you doing here? He's like, trying to pay for him to get him all through school. That's what the hell I'm doing here.
And it's probably his second or third job, too.
You know, I didn't ask, but I didn't want to set myself up for... Well, I guess I'm working my second job, too, right now. So we're all in the same
boat. You are.
Yes, I am. So, Kerry, if you're out there, buddy, have a great day at the office, as it were. Hopefully he'll call in sometime. I bet I shouldn't have said it.
That would be nice. Maybe on a break.
Well, I bet he's got some great stories. Can you imagine being a TSA agent?
Of course.
What you see on a day-to-day basis at the airport? It's got to be insane.
Mm-hmm.
So let's remind me every week, let's say hi to him until he calls in.
You got it.
Keep doing that.
All right.
And then Jack had senior pictures this week at school.
Yeah, the grand girls had them too. That's pretty early. It's like third week of school.
Yeah, the triplets had pictures too. Yeah, well, I guess they do it right away.
Yeah.
And but Jack... I said, well, how do pictures go? He goes, good. The guy knew who you were. I'm like, what? He said the guy read my name and said, is your dad Matt Bubala? And I said, yeah. He's like, oh, yeah, I listened to him on WGN. So I did, now Jack, of course, did not get his name.
Mm-hmm.
But whoever, I don't even know who takes the school pictures anymore. Is it still like Olin Mills? I don't even know who does it anymore.
Oh, man, there's a name out of the past.
So, gentlemen, if you're out at Woodstock at Marion High School taking pictures of Jack Bubala this week, how are you, sir? Thank you very much for listening. We appreciate it.
And see,
we appreciate it all.
So, all the years, you worked here way longer than I have, in pieces.
Yes.
And I'm coming up on my 12th year straight, just weekends, overnights.
Right.
And I have a couple of WGN hats, WGN mm-hmm. radio hats,
mm-hmm.
and some of my friends that I used to golf with on Saturdays when we get together, I got one of them, he's always saying, hey, you know this guy's on WGN, but this is like, you know, day people,
mm-hmm.
so they're not awake when we're on, so they don't know, but we go to a restaurant to get something to eat, and I would say, hey, you ever hear Roger Badish on the radio? And everyone's blank stares. So for all these years, and I've been overseas with the WGN hats, nothing,
mm-hmm.
nothing, nobody has ever heard. You know who's heard?
Who?
A whole table full of people over where my dad used to live in senior housing. They'd sit right up in the front of the dining room, and when they'd see me coming in, they say, Roger, come over. What's going on at WGN Radio?
It's our people, man.
Roger, I love them. They're up all night long.
Here's how I get recognized. There's people I will, somebody will be like, oh, Matt Bubala, he's on WGN.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I know who you are. My mom listens to you. Jess, which microphone do you use?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Kill Don't yell
me.
At me.
I have
We're not
a,
yelling.
She
no.
says in my ear, I have a comment. Then turn the button on and speak. You have free reign.
I'm a little birdie. Chirp, chirp, chirp.
What would you like to say, dear?
Well, this
feeds By the way,
up-
hold on. I'm going to cut in right here and say, Roger, did you know that Jess's golden birthday is coming up later this week?
Ooh.
She will turn 27 on the 27th.
Oh, that's what that is? Your birthday
You've never heard
is-
of your golden birthday?
No. No.
So you two, I don't understand sometimes. I love you two to death.
I thought golden was like 50th.
Say things like, I just don't get. Your golden birthday is when your birthday falls on the date of the month.
Oh, okay.
So like when I turned 25 on the 25th, that was my golden birthday. Jess will turn 27 on the 27th this month. So Roger, you've never heard of that. Jess,
no,
you
because
heard of the golden birthday?
Golden birthday probably yes. wasn't around when I had mine.
I'm sure it's been around for your children and your grandkids, though. So I'm not forgiving you that.
Okay.
Jess.
Yes.
We're booking a guest. Our friend Sonia Van Meter was supposed to be on us last week. She was sick and didn't hear the phone ring, whatever. So I'm trying to reschedule her. And Jess says, is Sonia going to come on? I said, no, she's going to be on a red eye. And Jess writes back, what is that? I'm like, an overnight flight? just texts me back, I just had to look that up. You're so smart. I'm like, no, that's just the world.
That's what a red eye is.
Yes.
See, that so I know.
You two, I don't get sometimes. I just don't get.
I'm not quite an experienced traveler as you yet.
I don't. That's just like something you should know by 27, I think. Right, Raj?
Well, it depends how much flying you've done.
Well, here's the other thing, though. I think that's interesting. There are probably very few red-eye flights anymore, right? I think with the whole cutback after 9/11 mm-hmm. and when the industry really downsized, I know there is one from Vegas that I don't take back anymore. I did a few times. It just beats the heck out of you taking those flights.
Yeah.
But I wonder if there are much fewer... Many fewer red-eye flights these days than there used to be.
Well, I just tried to book a flight for Bridget, and granted, we were looking for a specific time of the day, but
I was gonna say, Bridget's going to knock you out if you put her on a red-eye.
You bet your sweet Bippy she will.
Twice he's bet the Pippy.
Bippy, not Pippy.
Oh, I thought you were betting the Pippy. That's all.
No,
that's very
Bippy.
Different. Well, your Bippy, you can afford to lose. The Pippy, I was going to say, you better hold on to that.
A real Pip. But as you go through the list to find that time of day mm-hmm. for the departure, mm-hmm. I did not see, I saw some 10 p.m., 11 p.m. flights.
Well, depending on where
And it was
going,
only going over one time zone.
Well.
And it's not that long of a flight. So I didn't see any, you know, like 2 a.m. kind of things, you know, so maybe you're right. Maybe they have cut out those really late flights. I don't know.
815 texts, I'm 23 and listening to you guys every week, and hope you enjoy the vacation, Matt. Roger, you're the best. Jess, did you just text
that
in?
Oh, bless.
Oh, no, you're 27. You're
yeah, 27. Yeah.
Hey, thank you, 23-year-old listener. I love you. 870 writes, in that case, my golden birthday was in 1972 when I was one. Yeah, for some people, it's, you know, it's lost very early in life.
Yeah, right.
Now, I will tell you, Raj, when I turned 25, I'd never heard of the golden birthday. I never heard of it until one of my nieces or something was turning 10 on the 10th. And somebody's like, that's her golden birthday. And I back then, I was like, what
gun.
The heck is that?
Yeah, I would have had 19, so my 24th birthday. 24th birthday. I already had a kid. That was my gold.
You missed
and,
out on everything.
And living in Vegas.
There you go. That would have been a good place to have it. Hey, coming up, the stories that matter with Roger Badish from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Hear the sounds that matter, the top 5 at 5 from the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantes. Weekday afternoon, 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. You heard the tone, 3 in the morning. Okay, all of you that want to start yelling at me for talking politics, get ready to send your text. Kavanaugh, Rosenstein, however we say it, Trump. There's a crazy world out there. We're going to talk about it in the next hour after Roger does the news. With you here, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200, 308 in the morning, live from the Allstate Skyline Studios here on Walker Drive. I'm sorry, it took me a minute there. I hit a button on the on the board and I had to figure out how to get my headphones back on.
Oops.
Roger.
Yes.
Quick quiz question.
Okay.
What is the last year?
Gosh.
So you're saying, I thought it was Beto O'Rourke. What is it? How do you pronounce it? Beta?
Beto O'Rourke. Yeah. I mean, that's what I've been going on.
Okay.
Yeah.
He is challenging. He's a state representative. And, right, is he a state representative or is he in Congress?
He's in Congress, according to the, let me go back to my other newscast here. According to the information that we have here, Democratic congressman. They're not delineating whether he's a state congressman or in Washington, D.C.
We'll look it up. I think he might be just be state because it says the challenger, a three-term El Paso Democrat.
Well,
could he have been in Congress already?
Could have been.
And we'd never heard of him? I guess that's
well, I mean, he's a Democrat in a Republican state. Serving as the U.S. representative for Texas's 16th congressional district since 2013.
He's in the House, though.
Yeah, he's running for the Senate.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, the last time Texas elected a Democrat statewide.
You want me to guess? What year?
What year is the last year that Texas elected a Democrat?
I would have to say it was Lyndon Johnson.
All right, it doesn't go that far back.
It's not that far back?
No. Well, Ann Richards was a Democrat, wasn't she?
Oh, forgot about her.
1994. So it's been 24 years.
Yeah, not that long
That's
ago.
24 years. Jess was three the last time Texas elected a Democrat to statewide office.
I was actually young 24 years ago.
Well.
Sort of.
Maybe playing a little loose with the definition, but sure. So, Jess, you have some audio from the, I know Roger's been playing some.
Yeah.
Jess, will you play the little bit of audio you have from the debate tonight? Is this, and set this up for me, Jess. What is this about? Do you know? And who's answering?
Correct. So it starts off as the presenter. Okay. She's asking the question about the case, and each of them get a chance to respond.
So this is about the Kavanaugh nomination?
Correct.
Okay, go ahead.
Next question for Senator Cruz. Details are still being worked out, but Dr. Christine Blasey Ford may testify about her allegations of attempted sexual assault against Judge Brett Kavanaugh. Is there anything you could hear from her that could make you change your vote?
Well, absolutely. And listen, I very much hope Dr. Ford comes next week and testifies before the Judiciary Committee. I publicly called for her to be given an opportunity to testify. I urged my colleagues. The allegations she's raised are serious, and they deserve to be treated with respect. And I hope that she comes and has a full opportunity to tell her story in a way that is respectful, but I also think Judge Kavanaugh deserves a full opportunity to defend himself and to let the American people listen and come to an assessment of what happened. We don't know right now, but we need to give them a full hearing. I will say, though, more broadly than this, this issue, whether it is Judge Kavanaugh, whether it is Neil Gorsuch, whether it is other Supreme Court nominees, reflects one of the many massive divides on policy and substance and record between me and Congressman O'Rourke. Congressman O'Rourke doesn't want Judge Kavanaugh confirmed. He said that before these allegations. He said that after these allegations. He didn't want Neil Gorsuch confirmed. Congressman O'Rourke agrees with Hillary Clinton. He wants liberal judicial activists on the court who will impose their particular policy view. I have devoted virtually my entire life to defending the Constitution and Bill of Rights. I think one of the major issues the American people had before us in 2016 was what vision of the court do you want? And I believe Texans want constitutionalists on the Supreme Court who will defend the First Amendment, who will defend free speech, who will defend religious liberty. Religious liberty, one of the fundamental liberties that's been under assault. Who will defend the Second Amendment. And I would note, the justices that Congressman O'Rourke would insist upon, like Hillary Clinton, are justices that would undermine and effectively write the Second Amendment out of the Constitution. Those are radical views, and they're not views consistent with the overwhelming majority of Texans.
Thank you, Senator. That's your time. Representative?
The senator has a troubling history of the kinds of nominees that he supported. Someone like Jeff Mateer, to the federal bench, someone who believes in conversion therapy, who's described transgender children as part of Satan's plan. People like Andrew Oldham, who could not say whether the landmark school integration 1954 Brown versus the Board of Education was correctly decided. People like Brent Talley, who has never tried a case before. Dr. Ford's allegations should be investigated by the FBI, full stop. There's precedent for that. That's the right thing to do, given the gravity of the accusations. But the senator is right in this regard. Judge Kavanaugh does not meet the bar for Texas to serve on the Supreme Court in a state that is now 50th in voter turnout. Judge Kavanaugh has a troubling history on voter rights protections. In a state that is the epicenter for the maternal mortality crisis, three times as deadly for African-American women, Judge Kavanaugh has a troubling history in agreeing that Roe versus Wade is the decided law of the land. And in a state where you can be fired for being gay, his support for civil rights is in question. We need a Supreme Court justice who will decide in favor of people and for their rights that have been established by precedents and under the Constitution. And in Brett Kavanaugh, we do not have that justice.
Representative, that's your time.
So, very interesting debate tonight. I want to tell you a little bit about what the Dallas Morning News is saying about that. That was their first debate, and they say in there that, you know, it's crazy to think that there's an actual race here. Because, like Roger, I think, has said in the news, you know, months ago, they would have said, of course, this is going to go
Ted Cruz's way. Right. The last survey I saw a couple of days ago was that O'Rourke had a 2-point lead in the polls.
They say that the polls have gone back and forth, that recently, in recent weeks, polls have shown anything from a 9-point lead for Cruz to a 2-point lead for O'Rourke. Mm-hmm. Hours before the debate, the independent Cook Political Report, a top handicapper, shifted the ratings to toss-up, a stunning development for a state that hasn't elected a Democrat statewide since 1994. They have a debate on Sunday, September 30th, and also one on Tuesday, October 16th. O'Rourke is running in his first statewide race. While he's fielded countless questions at town hall events in the last 18 months, he has nothing close to Cruz's experience on the high wire of a live televised debate. Because Cruz, don't forget, ran for president, so he's been in lots of debates. O'Rourke has gone past the Tea Party Republican senator in fundraising. He may be pulling even further ahead. It says in August alone, donations just through the Act Blue portal topped $8 million from nearly 200,000 donors. I keep seeing this on Twitter, too. Beto O'Rourke is running on this. I'm not taking money from big political machines. I'm not taking PACs. I'm not doing this. It's all from you. So they're doing a lot of social media advertising to get people to donate money. And from out of state, too. I mean, I'm seeing these ads. Those ads normally wouldn't be targeted outside of Texas, but Beto is looking for nationwide money to help fuel this. And I think it's working. He's raised over $30 million. He's now raising more money than Ted Cruz is. And the fact that that's now a toss-up is pretty crazy. But it leads into the Judge Kavanaugh thing. I want to talk more about that. 312-981-7200. Take a quick break. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. Thanks for being up in the middle of the night with us. If you're just getting up, if you're just coming home, if you're just out driving around, we appreciate it. 312-981-7200. Skycap Dan's texting in from Midway. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight, Skycap Dan. 224, right, so who's hosting this show? I don't know what that means, if that's a slam at me, or if I'm saying my name too much, or what's going on. Wake up, 224. It's the Matt Bubala Show till 5 a.m. when Orion and Max take over with the morning show. All right, the whole Kavanaugh thing is very interesting. The whole testimony was interesting. The whole last couple of weeks was interesting. Then when it appears all wrapped up, we find out about this letter that Dr. Ford had sent anonymously, and then as it starts leaking out, she decides to come forward. And there's all sorts of questions about how that was handled. Senator Feinstein says, well, I didn't bring it up publicly because the person wanted to remain anonymous. I referred it to the FBI. It got passed around. Finally, things happen. And so I don't know where that is. I'll choose to believe that she was protecting the person like the person had asked. You know, they sent it to their representative. It got to Dianne Feinstein, right? I believe that's kind of the gist of what happened, and then it finally came out. You could question the politics of that. That's fine. I'm sure that's, and I do believe that with all of this, we do have to, the only place I wouldn't question politics in this is Dr. Ford herself. To me, she clearly, an incident clearly happened. She talked to her therapist about this. I think it was in either 2012 or 2002. I can't remember when. Long time ago, she, and there's therapist notes about this. I believe she's taken a lie detector test. Clearly, there was an incident that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I think that to question that, you know, a conservative commentator has said that it was somebody else. She's misremembering who it was. And then the commentator then apologized for that. And President Trump, who laid off of it earlier in the week, has now tweeted on Friday that if it was as serious as she's saying, she would have immediately gone to the police. He actually very stupidly tweeted, "Why didn't somebody call the FBI 36 years ago?" As if when you're 15 and you get assaulted, you would immediately go to the FBI, which is just ludicrous. So this week has had its ups and downs for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And now one of the interesting dynamics of it is how this testimony will take place. She offered to testify.
Right.
So the Senate Judiciary Committee is taking her up on that. They're saying, we want you to do it, you know, at this time. And then her attorneys say, well, that's too fast. She can't do this. She can't do that, which, you know, is understandable. She lives on the other side of the country. She has had her life has been turned upside down.
She fears for her life.
She fears for her life.
Yeah.
And there's a lot going on. But the attorneys also, so where it gets interesting, because politics do get involved in this. So this incident happened, and then they want to find out about it. So she offers to testify, and then her attorneys say, we want a full FBI investigation before she testifies.
Right.
To my guess, I don't know her, I don't know her attorneys, I don't know the inside of this, but that very easily then gets construed as delay tactic, right?
Sure.
Because what do the Democrats ultimately want? I think what the Democrats ultimately want, if his name isn't withdrawn, and I don't really think what, if you just look politically at the Democrats, what do they want? Like I always say, the Democrats are the ones that don't want Trump impeached. They don't. They don't want Pence to become president and have a head start on looking presidential and being able to get reelected. Mm-hmm. They like Trump where he's at, doing crazy stuff in the Oval Office, where they can take advantage of it. In the same way, the Democrats don't want a vote on Kavanaugh because they don't have the votes to stop him.
Right.
They don't want Kavanaugh's name withdrawn because then President Trump has time to come up with somebody else who they feel will vote how they want.
Right.
Right. What the Democrats ultimately would like is to stop this vote from happening until after the new year when theoretically, possibly, a new Congress is sworn in.
Right.
And the Republicans don't have those votes anymore. And the Democrats would be able to possibly reject whoever they wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Sounds logical.
So politics, I do believe, comes into play here when her lawyers are saying, we want a full FBI investigation before she'll testify. How long would a full FBI investigation take? I can't imagine you can, a week later, say, all right, we talked to the five people, here's what we know. I would think that is a drawn out and lengthy process.
Well, but there's not that many people involved.
There aren't.
To investigate.
There
to,
aren't.
To question.
There aren't, but there are people to question, and there, I mean, I just assume that takes a while. And to me, and the other part of it is how much could they actually find out from something 35 years ago? Because,
well, apparently there's a whole list of people who know exactly what happened 35 years ago.
There are only three people that know exactly what happened 35 years ago.
Well, I'm referring
Dr.
to
Ford,
the...
Judge Kavanaugh, and his friend Mike Judge, who she says was in the room.
Right.
Those are the only three people, possibly, who know exactly what happened.
Exactly, right.
Other people heard about it,
there's
were told.
That list
there's
that...
other people that have come out and said, I heard about this at the time, or I knew about this. So there are other people they could talk to, absolutely.
Talk about character references.
But as far as what exactly happened.
Right.
And the other thing is, and this gets much tougher and into muddier waters, because she's not accusing him of raping her. She's accusing him of appearing that maybe he was attempting to. He jumped on her. He held her down. She says
covered her mouth.
Tried to remove her one-piece bathing suit, and then covered her mouth when she started screaming. She also says they were both, I believe she says they're both laughing maniacally. They were hammered. So what's their side of the story going to be? A, you know, it's denial. We weren't even there. We didn't do this.
Right.
Maybe they believe that to be true. Maybe they were so drunk they don't even remember this. As we hear more and more about this school and their yearbooks and the parties they had, as more and more people come out talking about this school, Georgetown Prep, and and the whole culture of drinking that was going on in the 80s with these guys, and they talk about blacking out and all these things. So maybe this did happen and they don't even remember it. Maybe that would be their story. Maybe that's really true. Who knows? Maybe they were being stupid and goofy and they were kind of wrestling with her and she started screaming in the car, "Oh my God, don't scream." You know, who knows what their story would be if they said, "Yeah, this happened, but here's what it was." Either way, I don't think it's to the point where there would have, my guess is, especially in the 80s, there wouldn't have been criminal charges in this.
Well, it depends what she had. She thought that she had been violated. Who knows what the investigation would have turned up and what would have resulted from it? Was it a different day and age than it is now? Was it before? Was it during a time when women were fearful for speaking up?
Women are still fearful for speaking up.
Correct. But they are more speaking up now.
It was certainly in a different time when those things weren't taken as seriously. But even in a time when they were taken seriously, it comes down to they kind of wrestled with her on the bed. Is that an assault that's prosecutable? I don't know. I don't know that, but it's not. It's a very tough one as to whether, where would that have actually gone with a police investigation? Even today, where would that go with a police investigation? We don't know. It's tough to say because she was scared. She got away. She doesn't know truly what their intention was, but she certainly felt threatened. And so
that's the point, though. She felt threatened.
Absolutely.
And that has to be taken seriously.
And that's taken seriously, and that goes to his character, even if it's not criminal in nature. Mm-hmm. But so this investigation, where would that go? So you could see where the Republicans are going to say that's a stall tactic. There's not going to be an FBI investigation. Then they claim that's not what the FBI does. The other side's able to say, yes, they certainly do.
Well, in this case, they should, because of the position that he is being considered for. And if I'm not mistaken, the FBI did do background checks or did do checks when he was nominated for the previous judgeships that he obtained.
Well, it sounds like from what everything
because the, he was on the federal
FBI
bench
does do, help do with the background checks when requested to do so. They have done other things like this. People say with the Anita Hill thing, the FBI did whole investigations on this. So it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Right.
The FBI has to be asked by the White House to do it. The White House isn't going to ask him for that. So now comes the whole debate about when she testifies, how she testifies.
Mm-hmm.
So they say she's willing to talk. Then her lawyers say they want a full FBI investigation first. So then we got to take a break. We got to do the news. But then we'll come back to what happens from there, because it's playing out very interestingly, because now Dr. Ford is somewhat removed from the process. Now it's politics is how they're footballing it back and forth.
Yeah.
And that's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out this week. Some of the other requests that are being made on both sides are going to get interesting. Okay, a quick break and then the news here. 312-981-7200, 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you, 720 WGN. So we're talking about the negotiations for the testimony of Dr. Christine Blasey Ford about the allegations about Judge Kavanaugh. And they're waiting to try to figure this all out before they call a vote for his confirmation. So, as we said she would testify. Then the lawyers said, well, we want a full FBI investigation first. The Republicans said that ain't going to happen. She want to testify or not? They gave her till Friday to answer all these written questions that appear on this coming Monday. Her attorney said, that's not going to happen. You can't demand that she do it this fast. And, you know, we want to work something out, but we want this full FBI investigation. They said, if the FBI investigation is not going to happen, she testifies or we vote. It's up to you guys. And then they're like, well, she's not going to testify on Monday. And then they said, okay, we'll delay. You can give us an answer. There have been a bunch of delays today. They were demanding kind of a final answer we're going to schedule the vote on Monday if we don't get an answer. And so the attorneys have gone back and forth. They kept extending the deadline. And in fact, I don't even know, Roger, it ended up getting extended till tomorrow, right? They still have not negotiated this out. But or till later today, right, on Saturday. Now,
well, latest we have is that the committee will set up a vote Monday if she missed the Friday night deadline. But now Grassley is in one tweet or something that it's till Tuesday now.
I think it's until this Saturday. I don't know about.
You mean today, Saturday, or next week, Saturday?
Till today, Saturday, for her lawyers to set up that she is going to appear. So Grassley gave, the latest I have from Reuters, Grassley gave Ford's attorneys until 2:30 p.m. Eastern time to negotiate the terms of her testimony to the committee next week. The Times reported signing an email sent to her lawyers. Earlier in the night, Grassley said on Twitter he had granted an extension to Ford until after 10 p.m. But I think they have it now until 2:30. I think the latest is 2:30 Eastern later today. They're giving her lawyers to negotiate the date, or else they're going to do the vote on Monday. So here is the letter that was sent to Christine Blasey Ford's attorneys. So they had said, not only had they said they want this full FBI investigation, but there were other questions about security, things like that. And so, you know, I think there's letters being sent back and forth between the two trying to negotiate how they're going to work this out.
There was also a question early on, and I think this was pulled back, was that instead of legislators questioning her, they were going to bring in an independent lawyer to do the questioning. That was one of the early stipulations by the panel, that they were going to be allowed to bring in their own independent lawyer who had experience in this kind of thing to do all the questioning.
Well, you see, that gets interesting. And that's in here, and we'll go over this a little bit piece by piece and talk about that, because that's very interesting, because that sounds like, oh, well, that makes sense, blah, blah, blah. But, of course, there's politics behind that, yeah. Right? So this is a letter the Judiciary Committee sent to the lawyers for Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. Dear Ms. Katz and Ms. Banks, I'm writing in response to your conditions under which your client, Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, is willing to testify as to her allegations of sexual assault by Judge Brett Kavanaugh while the two individuals were in high school more than 35 years ago. It's interesting to me that in this letter they write that more than 35 years ago. Mm-hmm. We know when, you know, that's kind of known. Why are you pinpointing that as if there were other allegations more recently or later? It seems to me like there's a little push there. On behalf of Chairman Chuck Grassley, I want to reiterate that the Senate Judiciary Committee considers these serious allegations and wants to honor Dr. Ford's request to testify. We're committed to providing a secure and respectful setting for her testimony. The chairman fully agrees with Dr. Ford that we cannot have another, quote, media circus. The chairman has offered the ability for Dr. Ford to testify in an open session, a closed session, a public staff interview, and a private staff interview. The chairman is even willing to fly female staff investigators to meet Dr. Ford and you in California or anywhere else to obtain Dr. Ford's testimony. Sometime before last Sunday, September 16th, your client described her allegations to a reporter for the Washington Post, which published the allegations that Sunday. This was the first time that the chairman or his staff learned of Dr. Ford's identity. Dr. Ford had made these allegations privately to her elected representatives, including Senator Feinstein, who was aware of these allegations since July. Neither Senator Feinstein nor her staff asked Judge Kavanaugh about these allegations, despite having numerous opportunities to do so, including in a closed-door meeting between the senator and the nominee, during confidential phone calls with Judge Kavanaugh regarding his background, during 3 days and more than 32 hours of testimony at his public confirmation hearing 2 weeks ago, during a closed session of that hearing when sensitive information could be discussed, which Senator Feinstein did not attend, or when senators issued Judge Kavanaugh nearly 1,300 written questions after his confirmation hearing, more written questions submitted than were submitted to all previous Supreme Court nominees combined. Now, why is the Judiciary Committee writing all of this to Dr. Ford's lawyers? Because they could be like, hey, that wasn't our choice. You know, but they're pointing all of this out to say we're extending you this incredible opportunity, despite the fact that you've had more than a million opportunities for Senator Feinstein or whoever to ask him these questions. Despite that, is what they're basically saying between the lines. Senator Feinstein also could have referred these allegations anonymously and confidentially to the FBI when she was made aware of them. That would have protected her anonymity, as Dr. Ford requested. These actions were profoundly unfair to both parties. Judge Kavanaugh has unequivocally denied Dr. Ford's allegations. He should have been given the opportunity to say so directly to Senator Feinstein had he been made aware of serious allegations against him. And 64 other senators met with Judge Kavanaugh before his hearing. If Senator Feinstein had made them aware of these serious allegations, those senators could have also questioned Judge Kavanaugh. Dr. Ford requested that her allegations remain confidential. Instead, this confidential information leaked due to the actions of Democratic offices on the Judiciary Committee, and the allegations are now in the public arena, contrary to Dr. Ford's wishes. Now, I don't know where the leak came out. I haven't read enough on that to know if that is for sure from Democrats. I don't know where that, how that leak actually happened. Maybe it was. It makes sense that it would be, because they would want something out there about Judge Kavanaugh, but I don't know. I don't know the facts on that. The media circus and 11th hour intrigue could have been avoided if my colleagues and their staff treated these allegations seriously and responsibly. I'm afraid their actions have undermined the dignity of these proceedings. Chairman Grassley, when he became aware of Dr. Ford's allegations last Sunday, instructed his staff to begin an immediate investigation. The next day, Ms. Katz went on morning shows asking that the committee hold a public hearing so that Dr. Ford may offer her testimony. The committee immediately honored that request, scheduling a hearing for 1 week later. Chairman Grassley informed you that the hearing could be public or private, and that Dr. Ford could also choose to have a public or private staff interview with Democrat and Republican staff. The next day, you withdrew your request for a hearing until the FBI conducted an investigation. The FBI, however, issued a statement that it considered the matter closed. The Senate does not have the authority to direct an executive branch department to conduct further investigation. Moreover, the Senate has a constitutional obligation to conduct its own investigations. Chairman Grassley's staff has tried to work with Democratic staff to conduct an investigation, but they have so far refused to participate. On Monday, September 17th, Chairman Grassley's staff interviewed Judge Kavanaugh under penalty of felony. Democratic staff was invited to participate, and they could have asked any question they wanted to, but they declined. Judge Kavanaugh was forthright and emphatic in his testimony. He fully answered all questions. Chairman Grassley's staff also contacted three alleged witnesses named by Dr. Ford and obtained two statements under penalty of perjury. These witnesses directly contradict Professor Ford's allegations against Judge Kavanaugh. Yesterday, you issued 10 demands to us regarding the conditions under which Dr. Ford is willing to testify. Consistent with our sincere desire to hear Dr. Ford's testimony in her preferred setting, while at the same time respecting fundamental notions of due process and committee practice, we're willing to meet you halfway. You demanded that we not hold the hearing on Monday because Dr. Ford needs time to prepare her testimony. Because Dr. Ford's testimony will concern only her personal knowledge of events, events which she already described to the Washington Post, holding hearing more than 1 week after she aired these allegations is more than reasonable. We will nevertheless reschedule the hearing for later in the week as you requested. The committee will take Dr. Ford's and Judge Kavanaugh's testimony on Wednesday, September 26th. We deplore that Dr. Ford has faced serious threats and harassment over the past week and will make every effort to guarantee her safety. At the same time, Judge Kavanaugh and his family, including his two young daughters, have also faced serious death threats and vicious assaults as a result of these allegations, and they're getting worse each day. Judge Kavanaugh unequivocally and categorically denies these allegations. He was willing to testify last week after the allegations were made publicly, and he already accepted our invitation to testify on Monday. It is not fair to him or to his family to allow this situation to continue without a resolution and without an opportunity for him to clear his name. Holding the hearing on Wednesday honors your request for a later hearing date while recognizing that Judge Kavanaugh is entitled to due process. It is the fairest option for both parties. We also accept some of your other demands. You demanded that Judge Kavanaugh not be in the hearing room during Dr. Ford's testimony. We have no objection to that. You demanded that only one camera be permitted in the hearing room and that there be limited press access. We have no objections to that. You demanded that the number of rounds and minutes per round of questions be equal for all senators. We have no objection to that. You demanded that Dr. Ford be given adequate breaks during her testimony. We, of course, have no objection to that. You also expressed concern about Dr. Ford's safety and that the Senate provide adequate security. This, of course, we will do. The Capitol Police offers more than adequate security. The Senate hosts the President, Vice President, Cabinet Secretaries, Heads of State, and other prominent public figures all the time with the necessary precautions. Some of your other demands, however, are unreasonable, and we are unable to accommodate them. We'll get to those after a quick break, 720 WGN. Okay, so where we left off, some of your other demands, however, are unreasonable and we are unable to accommodate them. So here's the others. You demanded that Judge Kavanaugh be the first person to testify. Accommodating this demand would be an affront to fundamental notions of due process. In the United States, an individual accused of a crime is entitled to a presumption of innocence. And further, the accused has the right to respond to allegations that are made about him. Judge Kavanaugh cannot be expected to respond to allegations that have been made to the press. He's entitled to hear the full detailed testimony of Dr. Ford before he testifies. You have indicated that Dr. Ford has allegations that she would like to make in public and under oath. She will have the opportunity to do so before we give Judge Kavanaugh the right to respond. Step out of this for a second. I don't understand Dr. Ford's attorneys demanding that Kavanaugh testify first. It makes no sense. If she's coming to testify about what happened, he is going to respond to that testimony. It politically, the charge, make him talk before he even knows everything that's going to be said, then let her talk. But of course, they're going to say no, and he shouldn't testify before she testifies. He should be asked questions after the senators know everything under oath, what she is alleging happened, and then they could question him from there. I think that just makes sense. Back to this. You also demanded that only senators be permitted to ask questions of the witnesses. We are also unable to accommodate this demand. There is no rule of the Senate or the committee that precludes staff attorneys from asking witnesses questions. We reserve the option to have female staff attorneys who are sensitive to the particulars of Dr. Ford's allegations and are experienced investigators question both witnesses. We believe this will allow for informed questioning, will generate the most insightful testimony, and will help depoliticize the hearing. Now, there's some politics there too, right? So on the left, they're saying, well, he should go first because they want him to look as bad as possible. On the right, they don't want the senators to all ask the questions. Why? Because a bunch of old white men asking tough questions of a woman alleging sexual assault will look really, really bad. So they want female attorneys to ask her tough questions instead, because they're not the ones who are voting. They're not the ones who are up for re-election. It looks softer if it's female asking it. So they're trying to position that. I absolutely understand why Dr. Ford's like, hey, they're going to be the ones voting, or her attorneys, they're going to be the ones voting. They should ask these questions. If they want to say these things, they should be asking these questions. We'll see where that one ends up. You demanded that the committee issue subpoenas for the testimony of Mark Judge and other unidentified witnesses. The committee is unable to accommodate this demand. The committee does not take subpoena requests from witnesses as a condition of their testimony. You went on television earlier this week and said Dr. Ford wants the chance to tell her story in public and under oath. This is the opportunity we have given her. We don't need to subpoena additional witnesses to do that. And I agree with them there. I understand that they want all these other people to talk, but that demand is not one that they're going to acquiesce to. I'm not surprised by that. And they can get their testimony in other ways, but to make them testify at a public hearing seems unfair to any of those witnesses, whether they're for, whether they're corroborating Dr. Ford's story or not. To force everybody else into the public scrutiny on this seems a bit of a demand. You demanded that the committee call additional witnesses that Dr. Ford requests. We're unable to accommodate this demand. The committee does not take witness requests from other witnesses. Mark Judge and one other alleged witness to the events Dr. Ford has described have already denied the allegations under penalty of felony to the committee. We can obtain additional testimony through staff interviews, obtaining statements, or other means that are subject to penalties of felony if necessary. This committee has been extremely accommodating to your client. We want to hear Dr. Ford's testimony and are prepared to accommodate many of your demands, including further delaying a hearing that is currently scheduled for Monday. We are unwilling to accommodate your unreasonable demands. Outside counsel may not dictate the terms under which committee business will be conducted. Please respond by 5 p.m. to accept the invitation for Dr. Ford to testify on Wednesday according to the terms outlined above. We will have to issue various committee notices soon after, so timeliness is extremely important. And after that, that timeline was delayed till 10 p.m., and now I believe it is 2 p.m. I believe it is 2 p.m. Eastern this afternoon. So we'll see where it all ends up in the end.
And we won't know anything until at the earliest Monday.
In an email.
And at the latest Wednesday, if they accept.
is the earliest we'd hear testimony.
Well, if she accepts their conditions.
We'll hear that by today, I believe.
All right. What I'm referring to is the committee.
The committee.
Committee is scheduled to meet Monday.
Scheduled. They
to continue the hearing for Judge Kavanaugh.
Correct.
Confirmation hearing.
If Dr. Ford does not agree to testify.
Right. They will
they
continue.
They will schedule
on.
The vote.
Right.
The committee vote to then take it to the full Senate.
Right.
On Monday.
Right. If she does agree, then, and it's Wednesday that she agrees to.
Which I think she's already, they've already said no, they want Thursday.
Okay.
So, but that, but by two, right now,
mm-hmm.
Dr. Ford's attorneys need to respond by 2 o'clock Eastern today yeah. to accept the conditions or negotiate further the conditions. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they will move on.
Yeah.
In an email to Judiciary Committee staff, Ford's lawyer, Deborah Katz, called the deadline aggressive and artificial. Your cavalier treatment of a sexual assault survivor who has been doing her best to cooperate with the committee is completely inappropriate. So it goes back and forth. And a lot of it's politics and a lot of it is you know, it's a woman with a real allegation here, one that should be taken seriously and I think is being taken seriously, but then the politics of both sides is certainly taking it over. Okay, coming up, the stories that matter with Roger Badish from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. We'll take a quick break, then we'll get the news. You heard the tone it's for. We'll be to that in a second here on 720 WGN. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. Rosenstein, how do we do that?
I've
Roger?
Heard it Rosenstein and Rosenstein from the National Press.
Rod J. Rosenstein suggested last year that he secretly record President Trump in the White House. Ah! That was the latest story today. We'll talk a little bit more about that after we check the other news. Here is Mr. Badish. 11 a.m., 720 WGN. Matt Bubal here with you. Looking over, Roger, while you're doing the news, I'm just looking out, you know, on the beautiful sights of downtown Chicago here from our Allstate Skyline Studios.
You got a good view of the bridges, or at least a couple of them.
Yeah, the one right in front of us here, is this, what road is this? Is this Columbus?
Right in front of us is Columbus.
Yeah, Columbus, yeah. They're still doing some work on this bridge.
And then Michigan Avenue.
They've been all summer long.
Should be
Michigan
the next.
Avenue, yep, right over there.
Yeah.
And, I, we can see just a sliver of our old building from the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And what you can see is just the back end of the old... Tribune building, the original building before the tower went up.
Right.
Tower's in the front. And that's where they have the Chicago Tribune lettering.
That's still lit.
Well, it's not tonight.
Oh, really?
It's not right now. And I don't know if that's just a maintenance thing or what. I know that, so they sued. They're going to keep those letters.
Right.
Tribune tried to sue them for the letters back. They said, nope, it's part of it. We keep them. I think that got worked out, or maybe it's still a suit.
I think that got worked out that they're keeping them.
So they're keeping them?
Yeah.
And I know that in the renderings, it is going to change, though, because right now Chicago Tribune is on like a wall there. And mm-hmm. in the renderings I've seen, there won't be a wall behind them anymore.
Uh-huh.
They're going to be up and they're going to be lit, but there's not going to be something behind them like there is now. So I don't know if it's just part of the process. Our WGN big, so the you say WGN radio on the side of the building in big metal letters,
right?
And that got taken down, and the WGN part was here.
It's
are those still
in the hallway?
Those are.
They're still in the hallway.
They're going to hang those up somewhere.
I would imagine in the hallway.
That's cool that we got those back.
Yeah,
I haven't heard anything about, and I hate to ask.
Okay,
but the Walk of Fame.
I haven't heard anything either. Are they going to be building out?
They're not going to build out, but they're not going to leave that there. They're tearing that out, I guarantee you.
I don't know.
I'll bet you another dollar that you already owe me.
Well, I'm not betting on that because they're I'm sure they're going to move it.
Yeah.
We're not there anymore.
Exactly. So they're going to rip that out.
Are they going to put it downstairs in the on the sidewalk around this building?
I'm sure we don't have the rights for that.
I'm sure we don't.
So, no.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're going to do. I say we bring it out to the transmitter site. Have a big party out there every year. Do everything out there.
Yeah, but they don't want people going out to the transmitter.
Why not?
They don't want people
out
there.
Part of the history. Come on. Yeah. Come on out to the transmitter. It's just a big glowing stick in the ground.
It's a big secret code to get out there.
What?
Yeah. No, it's a hidden.
Yeah, we need to be more transparent.
It's invisible. It's invisible.
It's not invisible. You don't see it when you drive by. Roger,
what are you doing? It's got magical powers around it. It's invisible.
Clearly at 4:14 in the morning, Roger's finally going off. Speaking of going off the deep end.
Yes.
We haven't heard from Ben Carson in quite a while. He's been quiet.
Okay.
Our Housing Urban Development Secretary, Ben Carson.
Yeah, yeah, education. Or not education.
Housing Urban Development. Ben Carson.
Yeah.
Surgeon Ben Carson. Running Housing and Urban Development because a surgeon should be running Housing and Urban Development.
Of course.
He, and I don't know, sometimes when things happen within the administration, you think, did somebody just say, hey, go cause a ruckus so that everybody looks over there?
Yeah, I think so.
You know, sometimes the administration,
I think,
is pulling the old scam where somebody fakes a heart attack so somebody else can go rob the store.
Right.
Because we're all looking the other way.
Mm-hmm.
So Dr. Carson was giving a speech. Who was he speaking to? Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Dr. Ben Carson, told an audience of conservative activists on Friday that the sexual assault allegations facing Donald Trump's nominee to the Supreme Court are part of a plot by socialists to take over America that dates back more than a century. He says, if you really understand the big picture of what's going on, then what's going on with Kavanaugh will make perfectly good sense to you. There have been people in this country for a very long time, going all the way back to the Fabians, people who've wanted to fundamentally change this country. The article says the term Fabians refers to the Fabian Society, a British socialist organization that was founded in the 19th century and which today functions as part of the UK's Labour Party. An American chapter of the Fabian Society was established in 1895 in Boston, but it is no longer active in the United States. Nonetheless, Carson vividly described what he claimed the ideological descendants of the Fabians were plotting. They don't like what America is and what it represents, and they want to change us to another system. In order to do that, there are three things they must control: the education system, the media, and the courts. The first two of those they have. The other they thought they had, but it was snatched out from under their noses in November 2016. Carson says these forces are, quote, like wet hornets, just completely lost control off the deep end. And the further they get away from being able to control the courts, the more desperate they become. They don't see themselves as being able to control the courts for another generation. So what is left? Chaos and destruction.
Can I stop you there for a second?
Yes, please.
Would you look behind you?
Outside?
Was there anyone in the room with you just now?
Oh, my God. Are you going to tell me you saw somebody behind me?
No. Was your foot on your chair?
Oh, yes. I was moving the chair.
I'm going to hurt you.
I am going to. I'm standing for you.
I am so sorry.
I'm standing up, and I had my foot on the chair, and I was kind of stretching out my legs.
And you were twisting it back and forth, and I'm looking for a hand on the back of that chair. And I'm like, there's no way someone could move that chair that far back from you and do what it was doing.
Matt, be careful. There's somebody in there. That's great. I freaked you out.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
I didn't mean to interrupt your train of thought.
Carson's comments were also noteworthy in that he was among the first members of Trump's cabinet to directly address the allegations. Let's see, what else did he say? The fearful part is that good people will be afraid to serve their government. They won't want to take a chance on their reputation being sullied. Sexual predators is abominable, and there's no room for it as far as I'm concerned. Having said that, we must always recognize our two sides to every story, and I can particularly identify, he continued. He recounted an episode of his life when he was falsely accused of fathering a child out of wedlock. This experience was the reason that he could identify with Kavanaugh, he said. So, a century-old socialist plot. But I understand what he's saying, and I understand both sides of this. I understand, you know, you can see where conservatives would say this is, you know, as President Trump is now saying, like, you know, this is divert. You know, this is, you can see both sides in it.
Yeah.
So I hope they work out her testimony. All of that gets worked out. They hear it, and then things are decided from there. The tough part is going to be is that there's not going to be anything clear out of it. That's the tough part. It's an allegation from 35 years ago that, you know, I believe that this happened.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense that she would have told her therapist 10 years ago that she's naming somebody who's a friend of Kavanaugh's who's denying it. You know, why put him in the story if you're making this up? Now, you could question what happened there. What degree was this assault? What degree was this drunken kids being stupid? As you read the stories about their high school years, they were all stupid. Whether or not that's forgivable or not. Mary Schmeek wrote interestingly about this recently. I mean, there's a lot of different sides to this.
Yeah.
Does bad behavior as a teenager mean a bad adult? It'd be very interesting. You know, Kavanaugh's just denying.
Right.
So maybe that's, he doesn't remember it. Maybe he says it didn't happen. I don't know. If Kavanaugh came forward and said, listen, we were drunk and stupid. I did not intend to assault her in any way. We were goofing around and being stupid. I covered her mouth. If I did that, I don't remember, but I assume she was screaming and I was goofing around. She even says we were laughing maniacally. We were being stupid, idiot high school kids. That's not the person I am. If he said all that, I wonder what would happen. I wonder if he'd be like, nope, I'm sorry. That is not the type of person we put on the Supreme Court. Or if people would say they were stupid kids, all getting drunk, being stupid. You could see it in the yearbooks. You could see it in all these things that were written at the time. And it was a different time. I don't know where that would go.
Yeah, but that's, I'm also
that's
hearing,
not how it's going.
I'm also reading reports that other members of the Republican members of the committee have been saying outside of this all to other groups and other people, don't worry, he's going to be approved.
Well, that most
no matter
likely,
what happens, he's going to be approved.
Well, see, I'll disagree with that. It's not no matter what happens.
But that's what they're saying.
Sure, that's what they're saying. But I don't think they're right on that. I think a couple of things. One is, if anything really bad came out at this testimony, and Kavanaugh ends up looking really bad, I mean, President Trump's already kind of hedged his bets on this, saying we'll see what happens. They'll pull his nomination if they think this is going to get drawn out, and because of this testimony, the vote isn't going to happen right away. Or there's going to be more investigation, or if certain Republican senators who are in re-election bids have to go, I'm not going to be able to vote for this person because I'm up for election. I'm just not doing this. Then they'll pull him and they'll get somebody else in there. They want somebody confirmed to the Supreme Court before a new Congress takes effect, right?
Well,
before there's a new
Senate.
So if this happens this week and he comes out looking really bad, I'll bet you that they'll pull the nomination and find somebody else. What will be very interesting, I think, is how will they all look? Because there's two parts of it. One is, can they go ahead and confirm him if he looks bad? The other part is, how willing are these? You watch who asks the questions. If senators are asking questions. If we looked up where are the re-election races in this Senate, it's very heavily tilted. It's very tough year for Democrats to take over the Senate because I believe something like of the 33 Senate seats that are up, only like six are Republican.
It's a disproportionate
amount this time that are Democrats.
Right.
So Democrats have to hold on to their seats and try to gain some new seats. Very difficult to pull off. But those six or however many Republicans, mm-hmm. they're not going to be the ones asking tough questions because they're not going to want to look bad questioning somebody who is alleging sexual assault because it's not going to look good. And that's why they want to make sure that they can have female staffers ask these questions, especially the tough ones, because they don't want to come out looking bad in this. Yeah. And it's a very dangerous road that they could go on having this conversation. So it will be a very interesting week ahead, and I think just later today we'll find out where it's going to go. 312-981-7200, Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN. I still want to talk about Rod Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General, and also a disturbing thing that happened out by me this week. A student who was arrested facing felony charges at Huntley High School, that's near us, for making threats on social media. We'll talk a little bit about that. First, we got to check news headlines. It is 4:30 in the morning. Let's get in the newsroom. Here's Roger Badish. Morning, early risers. 4:34 in the a.m. here on 720 WGN. Thanks for being up with us early. Thanks for staying up with us late. Coming up at 5 a.m., we got the morning show with Orion. We'll check in with him in a little bit. Orion, as you know, he and Gloria live out in Huntley, Illinois. And there was a disturbing story this week. An 18-year-old Huntley High School student has been accused of making a threatening post on social media. The student, he is named, but because he's 18 and I'm not going to name him, was charged with felony disorderly conduct after the investigation into the threatening Snapchat post. Officials said another student saw the post, reported it to the Huntley High School administration. Administrators turned the post over to police, who identified the perpetrator at 3:06 a.m. Friday. Search warrant was executed on his home. Items were removed from his residence. Authorities said no other people were involved. He's being held at the McHenry County Jail until a bond hearing Saturday morning. And the police had no comment. If convicted, he faces a punishment ranging from probation to up to 3 years in prison. Now, and they say that the gentleman has no previous records, no traffic tickets or anything. And maybe this is a serious thing, and maybe they took items from the residence and there was a real threat. Or maybe he was being stupid and said something on social media that caught somebody's attention and they reported it. And I tell my kids over and over, and the triplets just got phones, be careful what you put out there. You can't be stupid. You can't make bad jokes. You can't do things in poor taste. That stuff lives forever. And you certainly cannot. We had a father on the baseball team as a police officer. And he said, you cannot believe how many kids they are having to arrest or who are getting in trouble because they're saying something threatening, whether they meant it or not. Or kids sending nude pictures to each other gets them in tons of trouble.
Yeah,
and it's a real problem. And parents, we all have to be really aware to keep talking to our kids to be smart about what they're doing. Now, maybe this was a real thing, but my guess is going to be it was a frustrated kid saying something stupid that somebody saw in our heightened sense of things and the vigilance that we need to have because of what goes on. Somebody reported it like they should, and that could change that boy's life forever.
Yeah, it's what is happening with young people today. I can't make a correlation to stuff that was going on when I was a kid in high school.
There's just such different things available to kids these days than were to
us. I know. I mean, back then you had the grapevine.
There's such an immediacy today,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, things can...
Instantaneous.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a shame. I think that kind of behavior always existed. Like I said, in our day, it was the grapevine. So, like, somebody whispers something to someone else, and they spread it out. And, you know, the old saying is, if you don't want something repeated, don't say it. Whether it's you're using an electronic device or, you know, whispering to somebody else who you think is a close friend or something. And we certainly had that back in our day. The rumor mill in high school was going crazy back in the late 60s. It always happens. I think it's part of human nature. But there it could take weeks. Nowadays it's seconds. And like you just said, the consequences could be disastrous. So just... if an old man can tell kids nowadays a little something, if you don't want it to come back to you, don't put it out there.
Yeah. Deputy Attorney General Rod J. Rosenstein suggested last year that he secretly record President Trump in the White House to expose the chaos consuming the administration, and he discussed recruiting cabinet members to invoke the 25th Amendment to remove Mr. Trump from office for being unfit. That is a story in the New York Times that was out today. Mr. Rosenstein made these suggestions in the spring of 2017 when Mr. Trump's firing of James Comey's FBI director plunged the White House into turmoil. Over the ensuing days, the president divulged classified intelligence to Russians in the Oval Office, and revelations emerged that Mr. Trump had asked Mr. Comey to pledge loyalty and end an investigation into a senior aide. Mr. Rosenstein was just 2 weeks into his job. He had begun overseeing the Russia investigation and played a key role in the president's dismissal of Mr. Comey by writing a memo critical of his handling of the Hillary Clinton email investigation. But Mr. Rosenstein was caught off guard when Mr. Trump cited the memo in the firing and began telling people that he feared he had been used. Mr. Rosenstein made the remarks about secretly recording Mr. Trump and about the 25th Amendment in meetings and conversations with other Justice Department and FBI officials. Several people described the episodes in interviews over the past several months, insisting on anonymity to discuss internal deliberations. The people were briefed either on the events themselves or on memos written by FBI officials, including Andrew G. McCabe, then the acting bureau director, that documented Mr. Rosenstein's actions and comments. None of Mr. Rosenstein's proposals apparently came to fruition. It is not clear how determined he was about seeing them through, though he did tell Mr. McCabe that he might be able to persuade Attorney General Jeff Sessions and John F. Kelly, then the Secretary of Homeland Security and now the White House Chief of Staff, to mount an effort to invoke the 25th Amendment. The extreme suggestions show Mr. Rosenstein's state of mind in the disorienting days that followed Mr. Comey's dismissal. Sitting in on Mr. Trump's interviews with prospective FBI directors and facing attacks for his own role in Mr. Comey's firing, Mr. Rosenstein had an up-close view of the tumult. Mr. Rosenstein appeared conflicted, regretful, and emotional, according to people who spoke with him at the time. Mr. Rosenstein disputed this account. The New York Times story is inaccurate and factually incorrect, he said in a statement. I will not further comment on a story based on anonymous sources who are obviously biased against the department and are advancing their own personal agenda, but let me be clear about this. Based on my personal dealings with the president, there is no basis to invoke the 25th Amendment. A Justice Department spokesman also provided a statement from a person who was present when Mr. Rosenstein proposed wearing a wire. The person, who would not be named, acknowledged the remark but said Mr. Rosenstein made it sarcastically. But according to others who described his comments, Mr. Rosenstein not only confirmed that he was serious about the idea, but also followed up by suggesting that other FBI officials who were interviewing to be the Bureau's director could also secretly record Mr. Trump. Mr. McCabe, who was later fired from the FBI, declined to comment. His memos have been turned over to the special counsel, Robert Mueller, in the investigation of whether Trump associates conspired with Russia's election interference. According to a lawyer for Mr. McCabe, a set of those memos remained at the FBI at the time of his departure in late January 2018. The lawyer, Michael Bromwich, said of his client, he has no knowledge of how any other media member obtained those memos. The revelations about Mr. Rosenstein come as Mr. Trump has unleashed another round of attacks in recent days on federal law enforcement, saying in an interview with the newspaper The Hill that he hopes his assaults on the FBI turn out to be one of my crowning achievements, and that he only wished he had terminated Mr. Comey sooner. If I did make one mistake with Comey, I should have fired him before I got here. I should have fired him the day I won the primaries, Mr. Trump said. I should have fired him right after the convention. Say, I don't want that guy, or at least fired him the first day on the job. He's confusing how early he's allowed to fire people, I guess.
Yeah, it sounds like it, kinda.
I should have fired him at the convention or after the primaries. Well, sir, you do have to be president. Well, but I could have. No.
I read that earlier yesterday, and I'm like, what? I had to read it again.
You know, from the standpoint of water, it's really wet.
Yeah.
Really wet. How about, did you see President Trump... He's just, I don't know why they take him out to tour disaster areas.
Oh, he's handing out.
Just got to not do that.
He was handing out cartons of food to people.
Was he throwing them?
No. He was standing in line. People were walking by in line, and there were a bunch of officials, and I think his wife was with them, and they were handing out the styrofoam trays of food. But then he also, at the press conference or whatever, he asked how the lake next to his golf course was doing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a bad look. You shouldn't be asking about that.
Yeah.
You know, they got some, don't ask about your leg, don't ask about your golf course. But I don't know if they're thinking, well, because we've all had people like this in our lives, right, that you have to control a little bit or sort of massage a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're thinking, all right, well, he's got a golf course down here. He's going to ask about it. Well, let's tell him not to ask about it. Well, if you tell him not to ask about it, it's in his head. He's going to ask about it. So do we not tell him to ask about it? Well, I don't know. What do we do? And I'm sure there's a debate about that. He only ends up asking about it. But then he's...
But it was at the bottom of his list of things he asked about.
Well, at least he waited till the end.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, touring, and he's at some guy's house, and the guy's got some big yacht, like, washed up on his house, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he says, hey, is that your boat? And the guy's like, no, that's not my boat. And he's like, oh, wow. Well, hey, at least you got a nice boat out of this. Does he get to keep that? We'll have to look into that.
Yeah. I'm surprised he didn't try to buy
it. He's just winging his way around on these things. It's like, don't take him to these. Send Melania. Send Pence. Send somebody else who just doesn't go off script. This is a bad place to go off script.
It's because that's where all the cameras were.
The cameras are wherever President Trump goes.
I know.
He can get the cameras anywhere.
I know.
His staff needs to do a better job of putting him in situations to make himself look better. They keep putting him in situations where it's too easy for him to make the mistakes that you make when you're not a career politician. When you're an off-the-cuff guy.
I'm going back to something I said during the elections and then after when he first took office.
Okay.
He is a CEO.
Right.
He said during the campaign that he would do this, and he's been doing it. He is in charge. Everybody does what he says they are to do. And that explains a lot of comments that you just mentioned a career politician probably wouldn't say. And it just governs a lot of what I think he does and says. And that's how I explain it, that he is so used to being in charge and not sharing. That this is why he does a lot of the things he's been criticized for.
But that's why the people around him need to do a better job.
But if you're around a CEO, you don't tell that CEO what to do.
I disagree. Well, if we got five CEOs in here, they would say, for the most part, I have my right-hand people who I trust, and they advise, and we talk about things.
But he never had those people.
He has had those people. He's had Ivanka. He's had his...
But he's not listening to him.
Well, I think he does on certain things. I think this is an area where those people who he truly trusts, they don't have any idea either, because they're not political people. They're business people, right? So he's in an area where he has to trust. I think President Trump is definitely a person who trusts the people he knows and trusts and have earned his trust. And to be thrust into, in this role, now you've got all these other people. Ivanka can't tell you about what to do at disasters or in things like that. They know the Trump family business. So that's where now you need these new advisors. And he's like, I don't like these guys. I don't want to listen to them. And, you get thrown in with new people and new ideas and stuff, and you probably don't want to listen to them. So it's been a tough road for him.
Yeah.
And plus, every week he's hearing about how they're calling him retarded. They're asking about the 25th Amendment. I mean, all he hears about is what's going on behind his back. So he's got to be even more like,
but I think
who do
that,
I trust here?
That emboldens him.
Emboldens him to do whatever
do
he wants.
His thing.
But I think it more emboldens him not to trust anybody around him. So it gets tougher for him to take any sound political advice because he doesn't know what is your real angle. Are you somebody that's secretly recording me, calling me names behind my back, or just trying to get your book written by creating chaos here in the White House? I think all of those things make it even tougher for him to try to figure out how to go about all of this.
He needs
some good political people in there to say, hey, let's not go tour this. We don't end up looking good in these situations. Yeah. He needs somebody he actually trusts.
The newest book, by the way, is The Mooch.
Mooch is bringing a book out?
Yeah.
He was there for 2 days.
I know. He's got
a
book.
What's he writing
out?
A book about?
He's got a book about about the White House.
It's an hour-by-hour account. There's 24 chapters. Hour 12, I peed.
Oh, jeez.
4:48 in the morning, 7:20, WGN. Texter, let me know that this is why we have Google. They said you've pronounced his name three different ways already, Matt. That's why Google exists. Oh, Rosenstein. 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 Here's some back-to-back texts for how you know, different areas we're all in, right?
Okay.
815, Trump is a jackass through and through. I can't believe he's our bleeping president. 219, so you're saying we were better off with sweet-talking Obama? So, there you go. 773, what? Why are you defending Trump? He is incompetent and despicable. He is responsible for his behavior. No one is making him tweet his racist, sexist, hateful things. He does that. No one is making him worship dictators. He does that on his own. No one is making him lie. He lies every day on his own. I am not disagreeing with the word you're saying. These are two separate conversations. What I'm saying is, he is the president, and as I'm just saying objectively, he's got to have people. Yes, he does all of those things on his own. There's some things nobody is going to control. He's going to tweet. He's going to say things off the cuff. What they can do is try to put him in situations where he is not going to do things they know he's going to do, like go to a disaster and throw paper towels in the air. Or this is what President Trump does everywhere he goes, and it cracks me up. Every time he's in some serious situation, all right, you have everybody have a good time. He keeps telling them to have a good time when he's at like a center where they're at a Red Cross thing where they're sheltering up during a hurricane or after a storm. You having a good time? No, I just lost my house. Yeah, but here today, pretty good, right? When he goes to the 9/11 memorial, he took a lot of heat when he got to Pennsylvania, and he's coming up to a crowd of people applauding, and he puts his fists up in the air.
Oh, the two fists together.
You know, we made a big deal out of that. I don't think that was that big of a deal. I think that there were people cheering or smiling or whatever, and he's excited then. So he gives them the... It was inappropriate for what he's there for, yes. But I don't think... I mean, God, with all of the things that he's struggling with here, this is what we're going to get mad about, the two-fist thing? Yeah, it's unseemly. It's unpresidential. It is nothing in this presidency. It's just a guy who's not thinking about the situation because he's not a politician. So he's going to make a lot of little mistakes like that. It's the bigger things that are more of a problem. So all I'm saying is the people he's got around him have got to do a better job of putting him in situations where he's not creating more problems for himself. Because he's got enough of them, as it is. And it's only going to keep getting more interesting. Orion Samuelson's coming up with the morning show in just a couple of minutes. It is chilly outside, Roger.
It's pleasant outside.
It's going to get chillier and chillier. You're going to really be happy
at
that
it's gonna be
indoor parking spot pretty soon.
Oh,
as I was walking here tonight, I was thinking, man, in a few weeks, I'm going to be freezing my tuchus off making this walk. Having to start that car up and sit there for 10 minutes before I could drive home.
Well, why don't you? Well, because you're only here like one day a
week. I'm not springing for that fancy underground parking like you.
Well, because I'm here more days than you, and it'll cost me less. I signed up for the special deal, and I'll be able to save money to put in the kids' account.
I'm not saying you're making a bad decision. I'm just saying I'm going to be parking on the street and freezing my tuchus.
Well, you're not too far away.
No, I'm not. It depends on the night, too.
Right.
About a block and a half
now. It depends how fast you can run in 10 degree below zero weather.
Oh, that's going to be miserable. It really is.
I know.
I mean, who is looking forward to that?
And I'll tell you this, and you may have already started to feel it at your age, youngin. The older you get, the colder it feels.
Oh, please. I've been feeling that for about 7 years.
Really?
I can't believe how when I was a kid, I used to love being out in the winter. And now whenever it gets 50 out, I'm like, oh my God, it's so cold out. It's terrible. It is really terrible. I hate it now.
Yeah.
And I used to love winter.
I did too.
Loved skating out at the park and playing and everything.
Did you stay out until you had frostbite on your toes and your skates?
Do you remember the 1982-83, whatever, that 80 below wind chill?
Yes. Yes.
I was out skating. Me and Johnny Ostrowski were at Munster Community Park playing hockey out at the park that day when it was allegedly like 60 or 80 below with the wind chill.
Right.
And our parents actually left us out there. Can you imagine today the arrests that would have been made? We were like, we're like 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, yeah. But we're out skating. Our parents are coming out with hot chocolate. We're sweating. We're like, no, we
they
need
were
water.
Enabling it.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
They knew we were out there. They dropped us off. Then they went home. And we're out there skating for a couple hours. They come back. You guys must be freezing. You want some hot chocolate? No, no, no. We need water. We're sweating out here. And we sat and we did that. It was below 60.
You're
now, I would never leave the house.
Yep.
Getting old as hell.
Yeah.
Okay.
I bet your Orion's not going to have any sympathy for you whatsoever. Well,
you know Orion grew up in tougher stuff than that.
I know so. He did.
But I bet you Orion doesn't love going out in the cold anymore either that much. Although he's a tougher ilk, so he might.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of Orion, let's check in with him next. 312-981-7200 is the number, 720 WGN. Up the stories that matter with Roger Badish from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Speaking of Roger being smart about the winter weather, we're going to check in with Orion Samuelson right now. He's not even here. He's not even in Huntley. Big O is back in Arizona because he's smarter than the rest of us.
Well, of course.
Good morning,
well, good morning, you two.
We're just talking about that it's going to be getting cold out here soon, and the older we get, the less we like that. And we're saying that, you know, Roger was like, don't be telling Orion any of that. He's not going to have any sympathy. But Orion's smart enough to be in Arizona half the year.
Well, as I became an adult, but it's been interesting listening to you two kids talk about the, the old days because, you know, I walked a mile and a half to school every morning and a mile and a half home.